Hey, this is Chuck Dixon, and you're listening to Signal of Doom.
Well, you know, for me, the action is the juice. I'm in.
Hello and welcome to Signal of Doom, episode 91. I'm Dave. I'm here with the main man, Stu. Stu, how are you?
Good, Dave. I'm looking forward to the weekend, though, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. It's a balmy Friday night here.
It's going to be
Australia.
A beautiful weekend.
Yep.
We're going to have the cricket on.
Cricket. Someone's seen Bon Jovi in a corporate box. Me.
Plus one-ing it
big time.
Oh, yeah.
Plus running it all the way to the top.
Dave's so far out of his league in that box.
Oh, sure, but not as a Bon Jovi fan. I'll be rocking it away.
It's almost wasted you being in the box. You should be out there in the mosh pit.
No, you don't know my knees and my back, clearly. I do like a box, Stu. And believe you me, you'll see me rocking away little rocking moves to Bad Medicine, It's My Life, that kind of thing. When they hit a couple of the new tracks off the new album, I might settle back in the seat a little bit, have a little Coke to myself.
He's got a new album.
He does. This house is not for sale. It's good. Yeah. John Bon Jovi, yeah. No, I mean, it's new. It came out like about 18 months ago.
Yeah, no, thank you.
He's still touring the world behind it. But he plays the hits.
Anything past, what, 2000? No, thank you.
It's My Life. That's one of his greatest songs. It came out about 2001, I think.
Well, there you go. That's cutting off. That's right around the tipping point, though.
Look, but he plays the hits, Bon Jovi. They play the hits, man, big time. So I
hope so. That's what most people are paying for the ticket.
For sure. This is the show that I missed, and now I'm in a corporate box where I prefer to be anyway, watching Bon Jovi, loving life. I mean, it's my life, as to quote Bon Jovi himself. And other Bon Jovi songs with similar themes.
Well done. That was very witty of you, Dave.
What Wanted Dead or Alive, Bad Medicine. I guess I caught my bad medicine back then.
Oh, please stop.
Now I'm going down in a blaze of glory.
Yeah, please stop.
Okay.
That's...
Now, I want to say for listeners this week, we're doing Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, Stu's pick. Also, I'm doing a Chuck Dixon interview, 2 a.m. Sunday Australian time, Stu. I don't know where you'll be.
Good luck with that one.
I'll be fine. I've done it before. I'm a pro.
Well, you're up.
Interviewing with Chuck, and which I'm really looking forward to. We've already had some good questions that I'm going to put to Chuck, but... This show will come out on Saturday, so if you're hearing this for the first time and you haven't been paying attention to my social media posts on the topic, shame on you, but you've still got time, so if you've got last-minute questions, flick them to me. I mean, I select the best of them and most of them, and we'll ask Chuck. We're going to explore some really interesting avenues. I'm really looking forward to it. So you flip me those questions either on the Facebook page or message me personally on Facebook, whatever you need to do. There's also the signalofdoom@gmail.com. Any of these options. The Facebook page is the easiest, or messaging me personally on Facebook is the easiest, where I control most of the social media. Yeah, and also later in December, Aquaman's coming out. Stu and I will, of course, do a full review.
Yes, we will.
Jimmy Terzis, Jimmy's Jargon Stu, is coming. Going to come on with me and do a Aquaman review as well, giving his spin on things. Jimmy's resurfaced. You know him from Bruce Wayne's World and other appearances on The Signal. A great guy. And he'll be coming on, and we'll get into it there, and we'll catch up with Jimmy as well. For me, Stu, I don't know what you've been doing. I've been diving into the Geoff Johns Hawkman run. What have you been doing this week?
I've been reading a classic JLA.
What period?
60s.
Oh, classic.
Classic.
Yeah, you're in keeping with how we were supposed to start this show, which was every week we were doing a JLA issue, and it lasted one episode.
It was a terrible idea.
It was my idea, and I take offense to you calling it. But it feels like you...
I told you it was a terrible idea at the time, and we didn't do it. You immediately backed down when I said, you realise we're going to have to do, like, the bad periods as well as the good.
Mm. Yeah.
And there's going to be weeks of just terrible...
I like the way we lasted one issue. What, one episode? That wasn't like we hung in there.
And it was the episode that lost as well.
Oh, well.
The episode that no one's ever heard.
Oh, was it?
So, according to everyone out there...
We've never heard it.
Never happened.
Wowee.
And I'm glad that happened. That's like, if you're going to lose one, that was the one to lose.
I suppose so.
It was very losable.
I suppose so. Gee, talking it down. To me, it's a lost episode. Whose audio was it who was lost? One of us's audio was lost in the first episode. Was it you or me? I can't remember. I don't actually know.
I have no idea.
One of us is basically a whisper and the other one is normal, basically. I forget which one's which. You know, it's one of those situations where, you know, when they...
I'm going to blame you anyway, because you're the one recording.
Well, it was my fault.
I mean,
I'll happily admit it.
Yeah.
It was my first try doing it. I didn't research it that much and fucked it up, you know.
Yeah, no testing. Just run into it, yeah.
I tested for the next episode. But anyway, so, yeah. So you were enjoying it, though, the early Justice League? Because, I mean, I've got the Bronze Era, which is the 70s era, and I've got some of the classic 60s. I mean, I like it, but what did you think?
Yeah, so this is, like, Silver Era.
Mm.
Did you enjoy it? It's good, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm never going to find a 60s comic as, like, the best comic to read. I think takes a lot more effort to read these comics.
Well, they're pretty cheesy and sort of hinky kind of thing, you know.
Yeah, I don't mind going back, though. Like, it's always good fun to see where it came from.
Yeah, I agree. No, definitely. And there's a charm to them as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And frankly, by the 70s, they were getting a lot better, too. You know, like, their storytelling techniques advanced by the 70s. In the 60s, you're very much dealing in the Gardner Fox era, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah.
There's some interesting stuff there. But, yeah, I mean, you've got to sort of take it with a pretty filtered lens.
Yeah, you do, and you can't read a lot of it at a time.
No.
Like, you kind of got to read one or two issues and then put it down and walk away.
Yeah.
Not like the 2000s plus comics where you can read, like, 10 issues in an hour and then walk away.
Well, when you said JLA, I thought you may have been talking about the Grant Morrison JLA.
No, I've not read the...
only read the first volume, remember?
We read the first volume, but not the whole thing.
No, we'll definitely keep it that. That was some fascinating stuff.
Yeah.
I remember when I started really seriously getting into DC Comics beyond Batman, like in the sort of mid to late 90s, being fascinated by... The Justice League always fascinated me because I imagine that they must just be the best stories of all with everyone all together. But no, you realise quickly that it's like...
You kind of think that if you haven't read a lot of comics.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're like, if all these comics are good, then together they must be great.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you read it and you're like, that's okay.
You get to issue 3, though, and you realise Batman's not there, Superman's not there, like a lot of them aren't there, and, you know...
Yeah, they're missing their big guns a lot of the time.
Exactly. And part of that was the...
Having said that, when they are all there and it is working, it is one of the best comics.
Yeah. No, I think it's amazing. I think that they fought a lot with editorial teams with Batman and Superman 2 regarding the Justice League. I think there was a fair bit of fighting going on. Like,
well, Superman. I mean, both Marvel and DC, like, I mean, they both got their superhero teams and crossover events.
Sure.
And they both strive for a level of continuity.
Yeah.
Which means you do have to kind of play chess and move these pieces around.
In the 60s, they cared a lot less, didn't they?
Yes.
You know. I think by the 70s is when it really started to become more of a thing, especially at DC, because Marvel were kind of ahead of the game a bit in the 60s, I always feel. I always feel that until the late 60s, the Marvel comics probably are the slowest, slightly more advanced, you know?
I think Marvel comics overtook them in the 60s.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, 40s and 50s, DC were miles ahead.
Totally, yeah.
Like, they were way ahead of the game. Marvel caught up very quickly in the 60s.
Yeah.
They had that absolute explosion with Stan and Jack.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And they caught up, overtook, and I think they ran that lead out for the next 15 years.
Probably, yeah.
And I think around the mid-70s, it was pretty even again. It was
definitely
ground.
It's a really interesting time. Like, if I was going to do a period of time in history that I would like to know a lot more about, it would be the history of comics of the big two in the 70s. Because I think so much happened. Like, the DC implosion happened at the end of the 70s where they had the explosion. We're talking about with Chuck, where they launched all these new titles and it failed and backfired so much. It was called the implosion. They fired like half their staff and half their writing teams and cancelled titles. Like,
they were trying to emulate what Marvel had done 10 years prior.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where they had this massive explosion of characters, but somehow, miraculously, most of them stuck.
Yeah. And also you're looking at the rise of, like, Neil Adams, Denny O'Neill is all 70s. The big Justice League omnibuses I've got are the Denny O'Neill run.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting time. Like, and I don't feel it's as basically as excavated and explored as, say, the 60s Marvel is. You know, like...
I mean, yeah, the 60s is always going to be a pretty heavily focused on era.
Yeah.
And then you've got, like, when Marvel went into, like, bankruptcy kind of proceedings.
Sure, in the 90s.
In the 90s. That was kind of another well-mined era.
Definitely. The image boom followed by the bust.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Yeah, no, definitely.
But that intervening 15, 20 years, 70s, 80s, yeah.
Oh, definitely.
A lot of big
And I mean, most of my knowledge, like the 80s are an awesome time for comics. So many independent comics sprung up in the 80s, like that we don't even know about, like let alone the ones like the Turtles, which, you know, survived. Like so many projects in the 80s boomed. Even before Watchmen, it was actually predated Watchmen and Dark Knight Returns, like the independent boom. It was actually the early 80s, like first comics and Eclipse comics and stuff. There's some really interesting stories, and luckily some of the creators that were friends with Stu, like Mike Baron and Chuck Dixon, were a big part of that boom in the 80s, you know, and behind a lot of those titles themselves, mixed with others. Like, it's really a fascinating time, and I think that there's probably a whole interview, and I think I'll ask Chuck about some of those stories of the comics that he wrote, you know, and did back then prior to sort of becoming a mainstream guy, which he later became.
Yeah, and it's also always interesting to hear the kind of politics behind the scenes.
Sure.
Because we only get the finished product as a fan.
Exactly.
And we don't see the kind of iterations that the thing went through.
Yeah.
And then editorial turned it back or said, we can't do that, or...
The behind the scenes.
The behind the scenes, you know, political drama that was going on.
When I was getting into comics in the 90s, it felt so distant from me, the creators. Like, honestly, back then, like, ridiculously so. Like, there was I had no conception of any of them other than Grant Morrison, who had a bit of a public presence. Times have changed so radically with the advent of the internet, you know?
Yeah, with social media.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're within one click of pretty much anyone on the planet.
It would have amazed me back then, basically.
Yeah.
It's quite fascinating.
You were one of the fans writing in letters every week to the favourite writers?
Like punishing males. That was always a fucking hot spot, the Punisher, what letter pages. Like, they go after the writers, like, hardcore.
Yeah.
You know, we're like, they didn't mess around, these guys.
I bet, yeah.
Like, on my third tour of Iraq. And I need Punisher. Now, Stu, poll results came in. And I must say, a narrow win, Stu, to Punisher Warzone, 55% to 45.
An absolute travesty.
Over Infinity Gauntlet. I didn't promote it on the Punisher pages. This was a smaller vote. I did get banned on the World of Kevin Smith. The World of Kevin Smith can go fuck themselves. Now, like, I'll say that right now. Like, this chick reached out to me last night, and she goes, oh, you're trying to, you know, share your poll, you know, blah, blah, blah. This is the fifth time you try to do it, and your final warning. I said, you didn't give me a first warning. I said, well, why are people so rude on the internet? I kind of came back with some questions. I go, we're trying to share the poll to see how Kevin Smith fans would react. Like, yeah, how they would vote. Like, is that a crime? Or are we only allowed to talk about Clerks? And, you know, guess what happens to you? She eventually blocked me. I said, maybe you can explain yourself. Or maybe you can't. And her response was to block me. And
I like that your first instinct is just attack.
Well, she was blocking the poll, and I thought I had a point. I'm like, are we here to talk about comics? Are we, you know, or does it all have to be about Clerks 1 and 2?
Like, well, it all has to be about Clerks 1.
Yeah, that seems to be the response. Yeah. And she goes, you know the rules when you signed up for the... No, not really. Don't really care. And then she did the... You know the unfortunate blocking where it looks like they haven't read your message, even if they have? Always disappointing for me. So you're wondering, did the last word I get in get through?
No, it didn't.
Oh, well. So we lost the World of Kevin Smith, Stu. But I think they'll
still
block it up.
Still, an absolute travesty, though. The fact that...
Well, considering last week was a travesty as well. So this was 2-1. It's 2-1. I'm in 2-1 in the lead. But by the way, I was backing Punisher Warzone and Stu was backing Infinity Gauntlet.
In case anyone's never listened to
the show. And thank you to all my Punisher friends who fucking recognised the signal for help, the fucking Punisher signal in the sky, even though I wasn't on the Punisher page. And you came over and gave me the assist and probably gave me the votes I needed to get through this
travesty.
I mean, Frank Castle kills scum. What's Infinity Gauntlet about? No one knows. You know, and that's the difference. And
that's the saddest thing you ever said, Dave.
The audience voted, man. The audience voted, dude.
About 50 people voted. That's a portion, a small portion.
Look, I think it was... I was.
And everyone out there,
prepared
if you're listening to this and you're like, what? Oh, should have voted for that, shame on you. Shame. Get out there and vote next week. Next week, get out there and vote.
Do we know what the next week
is? So we don't have this just ridiculous result again.
You're so bitter.
Last week
I wasn't bitter. Was I bitter last week? I think I might have been a bit bitter.
A little bit.
Yeah, I was probably a little bit. I think I was calling for an independent review, wasn't I?
Yeah. Wasn't going to bring that up.
Oh, well. Like, I mean, look, as far as I'm concerned, victory is sweet. Now that I'm back in the winner's box, I tell you what.
All right,
I enjoy being a winner. I've got to be
2-1 going into round 4.
Going into round 4, Stu. Are you ready to concede? I'll take your concession speech right now.
Well, let's see what happens next week.
What, do we know?
No,
who?
No, we don't.
We don't know who the.
Well, we do, but we're not going to announce it this week.
I don't know.
How do you not know? This is the fourth time we're doing it, Dave.
I have no idea.
You are just the worst with any kind of organisation, aren't you?
Well, you know.
Unless it's written in front of you.
Yeah, at least be written in front of
you. You're literally Anchorman.
I'm like Anchorman.
Right now.
I'm like Anchorman. Just put it in front of me, I'll read it. You know what I mean? Like, don't expect me to fucking just remember it. I've got a lot of shit bouncing around in this brain, man. There's a lot of stuff going on up here. Well, there's a little.
I'm going to put this to the test. I'm going to start putting notes in here that just make no sense and seeing what happens when you try to read it.
Now, Michael Kellershim powered back into Signal Conversation, agreeing with Adam the Computer Crouch that Legion Lost, a famous Legion of Superheroes trade, should be getting a run on the Signal. So, I mean, Michael Kellershim, when he talks, I listen, and we listen, Stu, and he's come in and he said Legion Lost. Your response, Stu?
Sure.
I mean, want to make it one of your picks? I mean, if you want to, you know, get on board with the... Well, obviously, what's a tide of momentum?
A tide of momentum?
Yeah.
Are you hearing yourself, Dave?
Adam the Computer Crouch spoke, and I listened. Michael Kellershim came in with a child with basically... He seconded the motion. It's now almost official. I mean, so it almost shouldn't be anyone's pick. It should be... You know what it should be? Their pick. The people's pick.
We'll discuss this after the show, Dave.
Okay, fair enough.
I like that you just try and, like... throw me under a bus while on air.
Oh, sorry.
I like that you try to do that every week.
Up,
every week.
You just... Okay, well, guess what I've done? Guess what I did this morning? I did some fucking research.
Okay, that was a lot more G-rated than what I was about to
say. Yeah, I did some research. Now, I looked at Warner's and Disney's competing slates for late December 2018. And
it's not even good for Warner's, is it?
2019. I picked out significant genre movies from each studio and tried to be as fair as possible. I really was. Be aware, I have removed movies that did not seem genre-related and we have heard zero buzz on. So I've pretty much picked out movies that seem to cater to the genres that we would expect on this show. Okay? Now,
sure.
I'm going to kick off with Disney's slate, Stu, which, surprise, surprise, seems to be the more commercial slate. So we've
massively
got,
so, yeah.
Mary Poppins returns, the
gonna
Mary Poppins
big.
Sequel.
Going to be big.
December 25.
Mm-hmm.
Captain Marvel, March 9.
I think 9, we both know where I sit on that one.
2019. Dumbo, March 29, 2019. I think White Struggle. Penguins, April 19, 2019. I believe that's an animated movie. I'm not 100% sure what Penguins is. Avengers 4. May 3, 2019. Aladdin, May 24, 2019. Hopefully, May 25 is when Stu concedes and gives me a captain's call on Aladdin.
Good luck.
Toy Story 4, June 21, 2019. The Lion King reboot, Stu, July 2019, Jon Favreau. Artemis Fowl, August 19, 2019. I predict that one will bomb.
I don't know. That could do well.
Could do well. I mean, it's a popular book series, I know. Frozen 2, I mean, come on. Frozen 2.
Good luck competing with that.
November 27, 2019. And then, to wrap the fucking year up, Star Wars Episode 9, December 19, 2019.
I mean, it's interesting. Looking at this slate...
Mm.
Lion King, Toy Story, Aladdin, Dumbo, Mary Poppins.
Yeah.
Like, you've got five movies there that are all effectively remakes of...
Classic properties.
A classic property. We're talking, like, early 90s or before with Mary Poppins.
Yeah, Mary Poppins' original is 60s, isn't it?
Yeah. And then you've got Marvel, Captain Marvel and Avengers. So hitting up the comic book front with Star Wars.
Yes.
And then you've got, like...
Toy Story 4? I mean, come on.
Toy Story and Frozen, massive hits.
Yeah.
Penguin, I think, is one of the smaller films here.
I'm not even sure what it is. I assume it's an animated movie for kids.
And Artemis Fowl, I don't really know. I saw one trailer and it looks okay.
I know it's a book property, that's all I know. I've never read it.
The trailer came out last week and it looks pretty good.
All right.
But I don't know how close they're going to be to the book.
It's a strong, put it this way, it's a strong fucking slate.
It's a very strong slate.
Oh, I would say out of that... I wouldn't be surprised if Toy Story 4 doesn't do the kind of numbers they're hoping, and Artemis Fowl, I predict, could probably bomb, but the rest of it looks very strong. Like, it's a very strong list.
But you're going to have massive hit, like Captain Marvel, Star Wars, and Avengers.
They're guaranteed.
You're guaranteed.
I would almost say Aladdin's guaranteed as well. I would say Aladdin is probably...
Aladdin, and I would say Lion King.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's a lot of heat on Lion King.
And Frozen.
Frozen, yeah.
You can guarantee you're going to be massive hits.
Frozen's
going
to be massive. Frozen's going to be one of the biggest movies of the year.
Yeah, one of the biggest of all time.
Yeah.
If you base it on what Frozen 1 did.
Okay, so that was Disney, and then I did Warner's. And now I do want to note that I did... take out quite a lot of, not a lot, but say four or five Warner's movies that didn't seem to at all be catering towards this genre, and simply movies I haven't heard of. Like, Warner's obviously has a slightly wider, you know, scope than Disney, and it just simply puts out more movies, and so I did delete, but the four or five, you wouldn't know them, Stu, you know what I mean? Like, they seriously, they're probably rom-coms or something like that. They didn't seem to be in this genre. So anyway, Aquaman, 21st of December. Lego Movie 2, 8th of February. Shazam, 5th of April. Detective Pikachu, 10th of May. Minecraft, which is interesting, 24th of May. Godzilla King of Monsters, 31st of May. Shaft, rebooting Shaft, which I didn't realise, 14th of June. There's an untitled Conjuring Universe film. I'm not sure if that's still coming out, but that, if so, it's coming out in July, 3rd of July.
Mm-hmm.
It Chapter 2, a movie I'm looking very forward to, and the first one did very well, 6th of September, and then the Joker movie coming out 4th of October. And
this
as
is
I said,
a very different lineup.
It's super different. And look, I did take out about four or five movies, primarily because they just, I'd never heard of them, and they weren't sort of in this genre, fantasy sci-fi genre.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you're breaking this down, they've got a couple of shaky movies in there as well. Detective Pikachu and Minecraft, I don't think people know how they're going to go yet.
I've no idea.
A live-action Pokemon.
Is
Detective
Pikachu
before.
Could do very well? I mean,
could do incredibly
audience,
well.
Yeah.
But it's the first live-action Pokemon film.
Minecraft as well. I mean, the kids...
Minecraft is insanely popular, but I don't know how it's going to translate to a movie. Mm. Warcraft is insanely popular.
Yeah.
Didn't translate well into a movie.
Yeah, it made money.
It did well in China.
Yeah.
It didn't do well in the States.
No, it didn't at all. It was very soft.
It was an absolute bomb there. And it didn't do well in most European
countries. No, it was all Asian audiences, basically.
So Godzilla's on a bit of a slump.
Godzilla King of Monsters...
It'll kind of do okay. It'll make its money back, but it's not going to be gangbusters.
I don't think it's going to be anything incredible.
I don't know. Has anyone been calling out for a reboot of Shaft?
Well, I mean, I wasn't, but I love the property, Shaft. I think it's a fantastic property.
Sure, bring it back, but...
It's not going to blow people away. I mean, it's to me, honestly, here was my comment. I think both studios have a lot of interesting movies. I think there's interest in the Warner's movies, but there's no way they're going to compete box office wise.
Well, no, even their comic book movies, where you've got Aquaman, Shazam, and the Joker.
Look, Aquaman apparently is getting real heat and could do very well.
Yeah, but I imagine Aquaman will end up doing ballpark of what Captain Marvel could do.
Yeah, I think that would be... if Aquaman does as well as Captain Marvel, I think that would be a real success for Warners.
Because I think they're both meant to be not quite top-tier comic book movies, but up there.
Sure.
Shazam, I likely could flop.
I predicted Fizzle, but who knows? I said that, and I see a lot of people online, but it's just a small set
of people. For me feels like an Ant-Man. Like, that's the smallest level of comic book movies.
Yeah.
If they can do well and make it a 6, 7 out of 10,
yeah,
it'll make its money, no problems, but...
Mm.
I don't know. It's not going to break any records.
You know what worries me? That it could come and be like the first Green Lantern movie or something, like terrible. And just...
I mean, there's always that possibility.
Yeah.
Conjuring and It,
I think
while
it
they're both going to be good movies,
yeah,
they're not going to break any box office records. Just
but
because
it made a lot of money.
It did, but...
I don't know.
Look, you're always going to struggle with an R-rated horror.
Sure, but how much did it make? I think it made like around 500, 600 million, something like that.
Incredibly impressive for the genre.
Yeah, look, I'm very interested in it, but I agree with you. It's not going to make 1.5 billion.
But you're comparing like that. They've got a couple of like The Conjuring and It Chapter 2.
Sure.
A kind of their horror-y kind of vibe.
Yes.
And the kind of genre they're missing here is like the rebooted classic comic cartoons.
Yeah.
Your Jungle Books,
which
your Aladdin,
Disney
your Lion Kings. And you look at what they've got. Like, you're not going to compete with them.
No. No, I agree. And then you've got Joker at the end, a movie I'm very interested in. Who knows?
Could go either way. At this point, I think it could go either way. I'm hoping it does really well.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think Joaquin Phoenix looks incredible.
I think it was a pretty interesting exercise because we mentioned off-air you were talking about the list. And I thought, well, I'm just going to do the list and we can have a look at them.
Yeah.
The Disney list is a slam dunk. It's got slam dunks written all over the place.
Oh, yeah, easily.
Like really?
Disney's single-year takings will be billions.
Yeah, they'll be enormous.
I can honestly see $4 to $5 billion.
Uncle Scrooge will even be sleeping on more money.
Like that's not even a problem.
He's going to have to do a bit more counting. Count his trillions.
Where I don't know whether Warner's is going to be that
Look, I'm sure these movies will do okay. Warner's, it's not a terrible slate at all, but they'll need their Aquaman to do very well, their Lego to do well, their Shazam. Detective Pikachu and Minecraft are the question marks. I think Godzilla King of Monsters will disappoint. Nearly all those movies do.
It'll be a fine monster movie, but no one's screaming out for monster movies anymore.
No, and look, I mean,
at the moment, it's a little bit of a dead genre.
What did you think of Kong Skull Island? I found it enjoyable, but that was all.
I did, but I never watched it in the cinema.
No, neither did I.
It was it was one I streamed when it came out.
Me too.
Because it was one of those movies where I was like, yeah, I'd be interested, but I'm not going to spend money to see it.
Oh, and interesting movies as well for early 2020 for Warner's Doctor Sleep, a Stephen King adaptation of a Stephen King book, and Birds of Prey comes out in February 2020 as well. So they're Jan and Feb 2020. I think Birds of Prey has serious chance of making serious money. We've got more news on that in this show. But anyway, that's that discussion. Now, Stu, the big news coming out earlier this week, and I know you had a lot to say on it, was the Captain Marvel trailer came out. Now, Stu, give me your thoughts on this trailer. I know you had a lot to say when you first saw it.
I thought this properly showed off what Captain Marvel should be about. This was a far better trailer than the first one we got.
Mm-hmm.
We got to see some personality, not just in Captain Marvel, but in Nick Fury.
Sure. De-aged Sam Jackson, yeah.
Yeah, the whole movie. Like, we saw a de-aged Clark Gregg and Sam Jackson. Both looking actually kind of good.
I thought so. Yeah.
The de-aging seems to be going all right for them.
I thought Sam Jackson looked very, very good.
He looked really good, didn't he? Not that he... Like, he doesn't need to do much.
Black don't crack. I mean, he looks all right.
Good now.
He looks good. He must be in his 60s.
I can't tell.
I know. I'm only because
like he
so
could
old.
Be 70. He could be 40. Yeah, I can't. He looks incredible.
Sam Jackson has told the story of how he was in a cinema when he was a teenager.
Yeah.
And Martin Luther King got shot. And they came in to the cinema and said, "Martin Luther King's dead. We're going to riot." And he said, "Yeah, chill. I want to finish the movie first." And we did finish the movie, and then we went out and rioted. I've heard him tell that story.
Do you know he was the page boy at the funeral for Martin Luther King?
I did not know that. Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I knew he was connected to the, you know, movement. Wow.
He was a page boy at that funeral.
But, okay, so he's old. Like, I mean, Martin Luther King died in 1968.
And he was at university or equivalent.
Right, okay.
So he would have been born roughly 1950.
Okay.
If he was 18-ish in 68.
Yeah, okay.
So he was born roughly in 1950.
Well, he looks incredible for his age, and obviously...
Which means he must be hitting 70.
Sure, okay.
Which is insane. So how good he looks at 70 is not fair.
And the amount of work he does, too. I mean, this is a guy who likes to work.
He's prolific.
He likes to...
Not only that, but he's got a golf handicap of, like, 3 or something. It's incredible.
He's a pretty cool dude, frankly.
Massive.
But continue, Stu.
We got a better look at Captain Marvel's powers. We finally get to see her flying in space... Like shooting blasts of energy out of her hands.
So she's not Superman, the old Superman. She can fly in space without a breathing apparatus or anything.
Yes.
Okay, cool. So she's pretty fucking powerful.
She is the most powerful character we've seen on Marvel.
Like, so could you, I mean, I hate to do this, but high school style. Against Thor, like it's an easy win to her, or it's
pretty
close?
Comparable, actually. It's pretty close.
I'm trying to think, he's one of the most powerful amongst the heroes, you know?
Yeah, I mean, now that he's kind of got the Thor force or the Odin force running through him.
Sure.
Much more of a fair fight.
Okay. But, he's a heavy hitter anyway, so... Okay.
Well, he's a massively heavy hitter, yeah.
So she's very powerful.
Massively powerful.
Well, that's good to know.
And they are billing her as the most powerful Marvel character.
Okay.
In terms of the MCU.
How much are they paying Brie Larson for this? They've really kind of co-opted Brie Larson's career for a while, haven't they, here, doing this?
And, I mean, they signed her up right after she won the Oscar for Best Actress.
Yeah. She's a good actress.
So, they were like, let's pick up the best actress of this year.
Sure.
And she was okay with that, signing on for years.
It must be interesting. So
shows you the power that Disney has.
Mm. So
we get a better look at the Skrulls. We see the kind of the other half of the scene where she punches the grandma, which I liked.
Yeah. Did we see a Skrull?
Yep.
In a thing?
A couple of Skrulls. We got to hear Ben Mendelsohn's voice. He's the kind of lead villain.
Awesome.
So we got to hear him as a Skrull, which was nice. This is starting to come together as a proper movie now.
It's got a very, what I would describe as, I mean, I didn't love the trailer, but I felt the epic scope of the movie. It's got me very excited for the movie. So in that sense, I am 100%, I'm as interested in this movie second only to Avengers 4, frankly, in terms of Marvel.
Absolutely. I 100% agree with that.
Yeah. And the trailer to me, I will say this, I didn't think it was that fascinating, but I loved the scope, and it felt like there was a story, and I thought, this is going to be a really good movie. I don't know if I want to see too many more trailers. Like, I'm kind of like, man, I'm really invested in this movie.
Well, that's the other thing, they haven't really given a lot away.
No, not really.
We know that there's Kree and Skrull, and they're at war.
And Stu, we're going to do Kree-Skrull War in the lead up to the movie coming out, for absolutely sure, which I've always wanted to read, actually.
Yeah, no, we'll do that, and we'll do some Captain Marvel solo stuff,
yes,
as well.
Yes, definitely. Kelly Sue the comic, yeah?
Most so, likely, yeah.
Yeah. Look, one thing I'm going to say, though, that I felt the did look bad at the end, I thought the bit with the flames looked super, like, out of a video game. I really? Yeah, look, I played a lot of, like, I just thought it was like Marvel vs. Capcom kind of 3 or something, like, they just, when she said there was like a turnaround thing with some flames, I just thought it looked really cheesy. Like,
no, I loved that bit.
Did you?
That looked really good.
Okay, well, I'm going to watch it again. I've only watched it twice.
Look, there's a couple of things I think we need to kind of remember here.
Mm-hmm.
First is that Marvel are now notorious for fucking with people with their trailers.
Sure.
Their trailers are incredibly inaccurate because they shoot scenes entirely for the trailer.
That's interesting. That's a modern thing, isn't it? Which I'm not a fan of at all.
But think of, like, Infinity War.
Yeah.
In the lead-up, we saw Thanos walking around with a gauntlet on with one or two stones in it,
mm-hmm.
where in the actual movie he had four or five in those scenes.
Yeah.
We had a scene with the Hulk running in Wakanda with all of those superheroes, like, running towards at the end credits.
He never got there, did he?
The Hulk wasn't in it.
Yeah.
Like, Banner was there, but it wasn't the Hulk.
And Thor had two eyes.
Exactly, Thor.
Dave remembers his one fact.
Yeah, because those trailers came out before Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah. And like,
so they were absolutely playing with audiences and making you think of a timeline in your head.
Yeah.
Like, Thanos has got two stones here, so it's after the beginning, but it's not quite. Yeah. And they would mess with you.
But I like that because, frankly, like, when I think of classic movies like, say, E.T., Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, it wasn't like I was watching the trailers as a kid. You know, they weren't a thing.
No, trailers became much, much more prevalent when things like YouTube became big.
Yeah. And but to me, look, if you could say to me, Dave, you can walk into Captain Marvel in 2 weeks' time and see no more trailer, I'd be like, fucking sweet. I don't need to. I want to be impressed
by the movie. But I'm the same with every movie, though.
Yeah.
Like, that's true of every movie.
I just feel like, well, it's true. Like, I mean,
but we kind of went through a phase where trailers would give way too much away.
Yes, and I hate that.
And now they've kind of gone, okay, we still want the hype from the trailer. We still want people to watch the trailer hundreds of times.
Mm.
But let's intentionally make it a misleading trailer that gives you a good idea of the tone and the characters, but not the story.
The ones to really avoid are the TV spots that come out the week of the movie's release, because they'll do flat-out fight scenes from the movie and stuff like that. Like, they'll do, and it's just like, you're devaluing the movie by watching those, I always feel. You know, like, really, like, getting
well,
the
they are for us.
Yeah.
They devalue the movie for people that are already excited to see it.
Yeah.
I mean, the goal of those TV spots is to get your average guy off the couch to see a movie that he didn't plan on seeing or didn't know existed until that moment.
You know what I remember in, like, mid-90s, Independence Day? You probably remember this, Stu. It got marketed so heavily. And I, for some reason, probably because I was busy or had exams or something, didn't see it for, like, 2, say 3 weeks. And, like, it had been, I was a huge entertainment whore during the whole time, and I consumed so much of that movie, and I finally went and saw it, and I really enjoyed the movie, Independence Day 1, but I was like, man, I wish I'd seen this, like, on opening night, you know? I just felt like, because they did so much of that movie, they promoted the fuck out of that movie, you know, because they knew it was going to be big, and it was big.
And I think Marvel have kind of crossed that bridge now, where they go, we want mass market appeal. Like, we want to get this out to every pair of eyeballs we can possibly reach.
Yeah, fair enough.
So now they're just trying to fuck with you. So the fans don't have the movie ruined, but they can still talk to your average guy.
Now, I've got a question for you. I saw a couple of articles this week saying that a real problem with the Captain Marvel trailer and movie is that viewers who haven't watched, you know, the previous 20 Marvel movies are going to be lost. Is that a real problem, Stu? Like, you know?
This movie, and pretty much all Marvel movies, will be enjoyable if you haven't seen the other 20. You will get more enjoyment from them if you've seen the other 20.
Yeah.
Because you'll notice the Easter eggs and the links and the characters.
Well, like, my mother's probably seen maybe one Marvel movie. If she came and saw Captain Marvel, do you think she'd be okay, kind of thing?
If she enjoyed that kind of movie...
Well, she doesn't mind those movies, you know what I mean? She thinks they're a bit silly, but she doesn't mind them, you know?
Well, like I'm saying, if she enjoys that kind of movie, yeah, she'll be able to watch it and it will tell a complete story.
Yeah.
Like, she will be able to follow it and enjoy it and see all the fight scenes and...
And it's an origin movie, so it's telling the origin of Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
I would think Avengers 4 would be harder.
Avengers 4 is harder mostly because it's basically a part 2.
Yeah.
It follows directly from Avengers 3.
Exactly. Now, Stu, just before the show, I meant to mention that they're talking about Avengers 4 trailer apparently coming out tomorrow, so Saturday.
Well, I mean, this week marked the one-year anniversary of the Avengers 3 trailer coming out.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Infinity War.
Infinity War, the
first trailer. They were saying George Bush's funeral pushed it. It was supposed to be coming out on Wednesday, but George Bush's funeral.
It had nothing to do with it.
Really? Well, that was the big rumour that's on the internet. I don't know.
No.
You don't think so?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. First, the funeral was massive news, but it made about 2 minutes of news in countries that weren't America.
Sure.
We certainly got the news. I mean, in Australia, we had... Yeah. It made, like, major news bulletins on every channel.
Sure.
But it was, like, a 2 to 5 minute piece, and then it was done, and we move on. Because it's the death of an ex-president in another country.
Yeah, but, like, it comes from America, is the point. Like, so it would have been on Good Morning America, is what I'm trying to say, the trailer. That was the argument. I don't know if it's true or not. No idea.
This is proper international. This is bigger than a president dying in any country in the world.
Well,
this is bigger.
Probably, yeah, the context of the thing. But I'm just look.
The other thing
is, why was it pushed then? If it was pushed,
I don't think it was pushed.
Okay,
like I don't know where people are saying it's been pushed because
people just seem to get very
Avengers 3 came out this time last year. It came out on Tuesday this week.
Okay,
so the Tuesday just gone.
So that's why people got so excited.
And people were saying, "Oh, it's the 1 year anniversary from that. So surely Avengers 4 will come out at the same time."
There's a bit of Chinese whispers too, because like it feels like I'm so oblivious. I was like, someone said to me, "Avengers 4 trailer's coming." I was like, "Really?" And the next second, I look on the internet, and the internet's in a fucking uproar, and I can't stop talking about it and how it was pushed.
So I mean, there's a couple of things to bear in mind here. First, the Captain Marvel trailer had just come out.
Yes,
they didn't want to cut the legs off that by putting out what is undoubtedly the bigger trailer.
And that came out. What, like Monday, Tuesday?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you're not going to throw out your second biggest movie and then just like bury the trailer a day later with the biggest movie of the year.
Yeah, I thought that was really very foolish. Yeah.
Secondly, this upcoming weekend, we've got the Brazil Comic Con.
Yes.
And it's heavily rumoured that Spider-Man Far From Home is going to
be I think it's been announced that it's definitely coming
full
out.
Full trailer.
And it will, so Sony are releasing Spider-Man Far From Home trailer, and it will come out online very shortly afterwards. So they've announced that.
Well, yeah, but they haven't officially said it's going to come out online like that day.
No, they said shortly afterward. That was the quote.
True, but that could mean a month.
Okay. Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, that's what's happened in the past.
Oh,
Comic-Con viewers get it like a month before, and every week you whinge and then you forget about it.
We've had this discussion.
Yeah, and every time you whinge and you move on.
No. I can live with a week. I don't understand why a month.
I know. Just move on. Move on. Get past the outrage.
Well,
there's nothing you can do about it. Let's just put it.
No, but maybe the signal can do something about it. I'm up in the voting polls. I'm going to say, like, I'm going to throw the gauntlet down. I think a week is acceptable. Frankly.
Okay, thanks for that.
I think I do remember. I'm getting memories now.
So, if they decide to release the Far From Home trailer, they will then wait a week or two at least before pulling out the Avengers trailer.
Okay, so...
Meanwhile, the whole world is
What's this thing about Saturday, though? They're saying this Saturday, as in...
That's when the Comic-Con is.
This is what I'm trying to tell you. That on Twitter... Literally tonight, just before we did the show, they're saying the Avengers trailer is coming out Friday night in the States.
Who's saying that?
Well, it's being reported on by Collider and
is it Marvel? Is it Marvel, Disney, or a director of the movie?
All right, okay. I'm just.
If it's not one of them, take it with a grain of salt. Massive grain of salt.
I'm taking it with a grain of salt.
Because we have heard a very large number of reputable news sources say it was going to be out last week and the week before.
So do you think, like Saturday our time will be Friday night their time?
I think Disney always give warning.
Mm. Sure.
Generally it's through the Russo brothers or Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah.
Or one of their major like celebrities.
True.
That will go online and say something along the lines of countdown 3, 2, 1 or trailer comes out tomorrow.
Yeah.
In the last few movies, they've had the star of the movie basically answer a random fan who's tweeted, when are we getting a trailer with...
The trailer.
Oh, really? How about now?
Yeah,
or,
that's gold.
Or how about tomorrow?
Yeah, and can I say something else? These people who are fucking going on Twitter asking them, like, get
a... Well, there is a small chance that you're going to be the person randomly selected to have that question answered.
Like,
and then you get worldwide fame for about 2 seconds.
2 seconds of fame.
Hey, that's worth it. That's worth it.
Okay, you one of those guys on there doing this?
No, I'm not one of those guys on there.
I mean, I've got 4,000.
I have 45 hours of fame every week went into the podcast with you, Dave.
Yeah, I was going to say.
It feels like 45.
All right, so you're so... Like, I agree, but like, hey, look, people on Twitter tonight were going fucking mental saying the heavy rumours that it'll be up by tomorrow our time, and you're saying that it's not going to happen, it's going to be a week or so roughly after the Spider-Man Far From Home.
Look, if they're planning on releasing Spider-Man Far From Home on the internet, like for the wide audience,
sure,
they're not going to just bury it by putting in... They're still partly owned by Marvel.
But what about if Avengers trailer comes out online tomorrow, the Spider-Man Far From Home thing screens in Brazil but doesn't come out for a week or two online?
You know? Well, in that case, I definitely say it'll take a month to come out online and they'll let whatever Avengers 4 is, I'm assuming Annihilation...
Oh, they're not... apparently, this is the other rumour. This is the other rumour, that the trailer doesn't reveal the title. That's the other rumour.
Yeah, so that rumour is absolutely just hearsay and hope.
Yeah.
And
well, people fucking report on this. Like,
I know.
Like, it's like... But
there's absolutely zero facts behind this.
Let's clarify again for audiences. What did we both say that the titles were going to be? You think Avengers Annihilation. Is that right?
Now, it looks like it's going to be Avengers Annihilation.
I'm going to go by again.
Originally, I was saying like, Disassemble or Assembled.
Okay, well...
And then you had something like Fallen Sun.
No. I had Fallen Sun, but what I'm saying is Avengers Endgame.
Oh, yeah. It's confirmed not Endgame.
By who?
The Russo brothers and Kevin Feige.
Well, I'm sticking with Endgame because I can't think of anything better. Well, and Fallen Sun's not doing it for me. Fallen Sun, I just thought was a great title, but the more I thought about it, it doesn't really appropriate to, you know, more than one person has died. Half the universe has died. And
It's not great.
A Captain America movie.
Plus, they confirmed that that's not the title.
All right, but for fucking shits and giggles, I'm going with Endgame, you're going with Annihilation. Is that
from this point on, sure.
Do you want to do a captain's call? If one of us gets it right, we'll get a captain's call?
Done.
All right, fine. And if
I can't believe you let me take that.
Oh, well, why not, man? I don't care that much, dude. Like,
okay, yes, I'll take the captain's call.
But if both of us are wrong, neither of us...
Oh, we either both need to be spot on. Like, Endgame. It has to be Avengers Annihilation or Avengers Endgame, or neither of us get anything.
All right, fine. The only reason I... Look, Avengers Annihilation, well, could be. The only reason I'm thinking it might not be is because... Annihilation, I link to Annihilus, which could be used later on in like a Fantastic Four context. That's the only thing I could think. But I, you know.
Quite possibly. But they've been teasing AA.
Fair enough.
For quite a while.
Okay. Well.
I mean, it could still be Avengers.
Like,
yeah. It could be Avengers Assembled, but I doubt it.
That just feels like the laziest one possible.
It doesn't feel that great. No. Disassembled sounds better.
Yeah.
Because that was a really cool Avengers story, but...
Yeah. But to be disassembled, it's...
They've already kind of been disassembled.
Yeah, they're pretty disassembled right now.
I mean, this is the reassembling.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, they're not going to call it Avengers the reassembling.
Avengers coming back from dust.
Yeah. The undustification. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I mean, God, I almost... The time people spend on this kind of stuff, like, online fascinates me. Like, can you imagine...
I love a good fan theory.
Yeah, but...
Love a good fan theory.
Do you? Okay. Yeah. Well, geez. I mean...
I'll tell you, I said this to you before, and you kind of looked at me like I was crazy.
Did I?
But last weekend, I watched Snowpiercer.
Oh, yeah.
The Chris Evans-led...
Crazy thing.
...movie.
Yeah, that's a bizarre movie.
The weird train murder kind of movie.
Yeah, I found it very odd. Yeah.
Yeah, fan theory, it's the sequel to Willy Wonka. It's absolutely bonkers, and I love it so much.
I love Willy Wonka.
Because as soon as you hear it and then go and watch Snowpiercer, everything makes sense.
Does it? I have to watch Snowpiercer again.
Oh, I can do like a full 10-minute breakdown. Like, I'm not even kidding. Really? It's absolutely...
Willy Wonka, the movie with fucking Charlie and Chocolate Factory, all that stuff, yeah?
Yeah, but imagine Charlie is the guy who runs the train at the end.
Oh, okay.
It's set like 50 years in the future. Right, like, it's a sequel.
All right.
Charlie is the old man in the end.
Okay.
Why else would he develop a train that ran with only using really small children?
Okay.
Why would you have really small children as your work... Oompa Loompas as your workforce? Makes perfect sense.
Oh, I see.
And he said that all the parts went extinct recently.
Okay.
So the Oompa Loompas died out, now his train needs
what
children.
What did you think of... Did I... If I can be honest, I think I fell asleep in it. Is it actually worth a watch again? Was it a good movie? I remember it not being that good. I thought it was a bit disturbing, and I kind of lost the... I felt
it's absolutely
like,
disturbing.
Yeah, I was really a bit sort of like nonplussed by the whole thing.
I don't know.
There is a seedy angle if you look through a certain lens to Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Like there is a bizarre, like that's a weird movie if you think about it. You know?
Oh, it is. A lot of ways, it's absolutely a weird movie.
Yeah.
There's a lot of weird undertones, and if you look at it, with the intention of seeing it, you'll see some really fucked up shit in that movie.
Yeah, it's interesting. It makes it interesting.
It was designed as a very innocent children's movie.
Sure.
And I think most people view it as such.
Yeah.
So you don't question the fact that he has a whole slave labor force of, like,
and it was
children,
from a time where you got away with a lot of mixing some weird dark themes into children's fiction, like he like.
But I mean, let me just put a couple of arguments for this crazy ass fan theory of mine.
Sure.
In Willy Wonka, one of the major like children cast members effectively die in each major room.
Yeah.
And they whittle it down to one.
Yeah.
On Snowpiercer, one of the major characters dies in every room, whittling it down to one who makes it through to the final room.
Sure. Okay.
So it's like a selection criteria.
Yeah.
Okay. Every room has giant W's posted on the walls as branding.
Okay.
And if you look at Willy Wonka, he brands everything with a giant W.
Yeah.
Every bit of machinery that Willy Wonka made was outlandish and run by Oompa Loompas.
Yeah.
This is a train that's meant to run forever. That's run with really tiny people.
Sure.
Yeah, okay. Willy Wonka's factory was completely self-sufficient.
Yeah.
The people outside were saying no one's ever going in or out.
Yeah.
Which means they supplied food and electricity and water and everything on a self-contained plant.
Did they have golden tickets to get on or something?
No, but they said there was a bunch of people that were lucky enough to get on the train before the freezing happened.
So there is some thematic sort of, you know, and detail orientated.
It's not crazy.
No, it's actually interesting is what it is. It makes me interested to rewatch the movie again because they'll probably give it a different viewing, you know?
Guy that makes a self-sustaining train with weird candy bar-like food for the passengers?
Sure. And Willy Wonka was a little fucking nuts.
A little bit nuts.
Yeah, he was a little
imagine
bit crazy.
50 years of living with him. So now Charlie, a little bit
50
nuts.
50 years of child abuse.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, like, yeah, addiction to chocolate and all sorts of stuff going on. Yeah, I know.
He's fucked up.
Yeah, things are going to get a little strange in there, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, some compromises are going to have to be made. Now, Stu, turning to Warner Brothers, they're reportedly working on a Zatanna film. Do you know much about Zatanna, Stu?
I love this. I love this idea.
Yeah.
I mean, this is their version of a Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
This is them introducing proper, like, witchcraft and wizardry into their comic book realm.
Zatanna has had some very interesting stories. You know, really interesting.
Absolutely. And look at the success they've had with Fantastic Beasts and Harry Potter.
Mm.
They know how to do magic really well.
Yeah. You can do other worlds. You can do all sorts of stuff with this. Like, there's a lot of cool Zatanna stories that they've done over the years. Grant Morrison's done cool stuff. Paul Dini's done cool stuff. And that's just to pick a couple. I mean, she was used in Batman Animated Series, Justice League member, Justice League.
But she'll work well as a team member if you throw in with Justice League, like you said. She works great on her own. You can go with the darkest sort of story.
She did a duet with Power Girl. But Canary.
You could very easily run a darker spin-off and have like a Swamp Thing.
Yeah. Well, she's Justly Dark, isn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so actually, that's a good point. Like,
I reckon this is a fantastic film for them.
Yeah, I think it's a very good one. Now, Stu, this is some news that got announced today. Marvel have announced that Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3 will be released exclusively on Nintendo Switch consoles in 2019. I was such a Marvel Alliance 1 and 2 fan. I'm kind of disappointed it's not on Xbox and, you know, PS4s and stuff.
Yeah, I'm a little disappointed it's on the Switch.
Yeah, me too. And they made a big deal about how it's exclusive. I'm kind of annoyed.
Yeah. For me, the Switch doesn't have any kind of power behind it.
I'm not buying one. Fuck them. Like, you know, this is just annoying me now. You know, I feel like going Wolverine and fucking shredding them with my claws, frankly. I'm that pissed off about it. But, like, what can I do about it? I'm not buying a Switch for one fucking game. Well, why the fuck did they decide on a Switch? What was wrong with Xbox and PS4s? Why a Switch? You know, I know the kids. Right.
Disney want to align themselves with Nintendo.
Yeah,
Is weird because they just released like Spider-Man on PS4, which is one of the biggest games.
I know.
Exclusive to PS4.
I know. It's odd. Here we go. We've already covered this. The stuff about Avengers 4, we've covered that in detail. Did you know that Rosie Perez was cast as Renee Montoya in Birds of Prey? I didn't know this until today.
Yeah, it was announced maybe a month ago.
I had no idea. Rosie Perez, one of my favourite actresses.
We did it on the show.
Well, she's going to go full Hispanic.
You don't remember that?
Not at all. And I love Rosie Perez.
And you love Renee Montoya. This is a good fit.
Yeah, I know. Rosie! You know, she's going to turn like a very Hispanic Renee Montoya, which kind of is fitting. Like, I've never imagined Renee Montoya kind of sounding like Rosie Perez. That's, you know, I've never, ever imagined that. But, like, she's going to go hard.
I don't know how hard she's... Like, she might turn it down a little bit.
Have you ever seen Rosie Perez ever turn
it down? Maybe a little bit. I don't know.
Okay, well, maybe. I mean, maybe the years since I've seen her in her last role may have softened her, but I've only seen her do really kind of, like, on-the-fucking-nose kind of Hispanic, you know? But, hey, I'm down for it. I love Rosie Perez, to be honest. I think she's a pretty cool actress, actually. And this is cool. Now, yeah. Collider reports, bolstered by early box office tracking, Warner Brothers is reportedly already in early development on an Aquaman sequel. They're very confident on this.
Collider needs to report some actual news for us.
Well, this guy, Frosty Weintraub,
The second that they went into production on Aquaman...
Sure.
Somebody out there was going, okay, let's just contingency plan work on an Aquaman 2.
Well, yeah, but like...
They do that with every movie.
But like they're pushing it to...
And when they say it's in early production, that means they've got like one guy who's like, I've got half a script.
Well, the guy at Collider has, in fairness to him, broken quite a bit of good news, dude. Like,
This isn't any of it. This is...
This feels like to me...
This
like
is the most obvious thing in the
world. They would already have some ideas. Like, exactly. If the movie makes a certain amount of money, it's being greenlit kind of thing.
Oh, I'll tell you what, right now, Disney already have early development scripts for, like, the next Iron Man film, even though we're probably not going to get one.
Mm.
Like, they just go, if it's going to make some money...
Yeah.
Let's put it in early development.
Let's have an idea.
Let's have some people on it, because when it gets greenlit, we want to go hard and fast.
Well, who could have been Momoa telling us about how the opening scene of the Aquaman sequel and then the executives' withdrawals were dropping down? I'm like, all you had was the opening? Like, okay. What are we going to do for the rest of the 2.5 hours, Jason? Not sure. I mean, what do you think the bet was that was him crashing down from a building or from a plane or something, Stu, you know, and splashing down on a fucking beach? I think pretty high. You know, in his opening. Now, here's some news, Stu, and I was dying to get your take on this. Marvel Studios are reportedly fast-tracking a Shang-Chi movie, or Chai movie, I'm not sure how you pronounce it. Are you familiar with this character, Stu? He's basically like a sort of Bruce Lee.
He was brought in during the big 70s Kung Fu craze.
Exactly, Paul Gillespie.
Yeah. I've read the first run of Shang-Chi.
Okay, and... Where are you? Because the backstory I find is interesting. His father was Fu Manchu, and Shang-Chi fights against his father's plans. I thought that was a neat twist.
I don't know how much of it they're going to stick to if they pung it out in a full-on movie.
Yeah.
Fu Manchu is kind of...
It's almost borderline racist now,
depending on how you do it.
Well, yeah.
You can get away with it in certain circumstances, but I don't know if I can pull it off for a full movie.
I mean, can I be honest? I've never read a Shang-Chi storyline I've ever liked at all. Like, I mean, he's probably got good stuff I haven't read, you know?
His early stuff wasn't bad, but it is very much of the time.
I like Bruce Lee,
though. 70s Kung Fu Bruce. It is identical to Bruce Lee.
Well,
if you put Shang-Chi in a yellow jumpsuit, you're looking at...
I fucking dig Bruce Lee hardcore. I think Bruce Lee was fucking awesome, so... I've not read the 70s stuff, and I
probably... Well, this is 99% Bruce Lee.
Okay. Well, like, Bruce Lee was pretty fucking cool.
There's nothing else in it. But he was drawn to look like Bruce Lee.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I thought.
It's not even close.
Hey, look, he turns up in Hickman's Avengers, and he looks fucking cool. I've just not read a story of him.
They bring him in every now and again. He is meant to be the ultimate martial artist in the Marvel Universe.
How come he doesn't get more of a run, then? Like, there's so many street-level books.
I just think that... Like, he does get a run.
Yeah.
But he's just overshadowed by anyone with actual power. Because he doesn't have any superpowers. He
doesn't even have any chi or anything?
No.
Oh, okay. So he's not like a Iron Fist kind of style. He's just...
So Iron Fist was always meant to be a character that was slightly less ability in terms of fighting style.
Sure.
But he had the Iron Fists and the channeling his chi, and he could explode and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So Iron Fist was more powerful.
Right.
And that was them kind of taking Shang-Chi and moving him into a more superhero-y kind of era.
Right, I see. Whereas Shang-Chi is very much your Bruce Lee, the ultimate martial artist.
Yeah. Shang-Chi has no supernatural ability originally. I think they tried to make him a little more like Taskmaster, kind of.
Oh, okay, some mental stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
It didn't really stick, because we already had
Taskmaster. What do you think about the movie, though? Like, where are you on the movie? I mean, they're apparently fast-tracking it, so...
I don't know. It's not one of the characters that I would have fast-tracked.
It came out of nowhere for me.
There's a lot of characters I would have rather have
seen. Where's Ghost Rider? Where's Blade? Like, to me, Shang-Chi should be in a movie with those guys. I feel like the audience is... But that said, a lot of people,
Right now, I'm just like, we've got a whole slate of Marvel characters that need second and third movies.
Sure.
Like, your Black Panthers, your Doctor Strangers, your Captain Marvels.
Well, we know Black Panther 2's happening.
Yeah, I know. But we've got a bunch of those movies that all have twos and threes.
Yeah.
We've got Black Widow coming out.
Yes.
We should have X-Men and Fantastic Four movies.
Good point. Good point.
I can think of a good 20 movies that I would put before I start digging around characters that did stick, but were never massively popular characters.
Yeah, I'm just like, Shang-Chi to me, it feels... I don't want to be the guy going, look, I get it. I get it. There's Asian audiences out there who this could really be tailored towards, like, to be brutally frank. And that's maybe what they're going after, you know?
It could well be.
Well, I mean, you know, I can't think of any other reason to dig out Shang-Chi. He's not exactly done a lot recently.
But see, the problem for me is Shang-Chi was written and drawn with a lot of Asian stereotypes.
Yeah.
And that would actually be quite offensive to Asian audiences, as opposed to embracing.
But some of them love him. Like, he's beloved by some. Dude, there were plenty of fucking Asians on the fucking internet loving this news. And general Asian members,
but
too.
You're going to see people love and hate on the internet. That's not new.
True. If I sound...
Like, this movie could very, very quickly go very, very racist.
But it won't, they're not intending to. They're not going to do that now.
They're not intending to be racist, but it doesn't take much.
I don't think they'll do... Well, it doesn't take much for people to get offended.
Like, when you've got Fu Manchu as the father...
I don't see that happening.
There's not really a good way to do that. Acceptable way to run that.
They won't do... The Fu Manchu I'm thinking of is kind of like the Mandarin, like in the 60s comics, yeah? How he looks.
Yeah, I'm thinking like Pai Mei from Kill Bill.
Vaguely, yes, okay, yeah. Yeah, well, they did it there.
Yeah, but that was... that was almost meant as, like, sarcasm more than...
Yeah, true, okay. But, and they've done it. Plenty of, you know, literature and movies, like, maybe up until, like, I would dare say the 2000s, they probably stopped doing that kind of stuff so much.
Yeah, I agree.
Maybe they'll just do it without the look. So he'll have an older mentor who doesn't have the Fu Manchu, the beard that he's always stroking and stuff.
See, for me, this feels a lot more like something they put on the streaming service.
Yeah.
This feels like a better replacement to what was the failed Iron Fist.
Right. Sure. Yeah. Okay.
Like, imagine a martial artist fighting on the streets.
Yeah.
Meeting up with other street-level heroes. Like, that's great.
I would dig it. I would think that you could probably do some cool stuff, like, with that totally. Like, maybe a fighting tournament or something.
Yeah, possible. I mean, you're running into...
What?
Cobra Kai, that kind of...
I don't give a shit what you're running into. Like, I'm thinking, like, we're doing Bruce Lee, like, you know...
yeah, but this is feeling very Karate Kid, though, isn't it? Well, when you're like, we'll run a tournament.
No,
he'll get beaten by the bully, and then he'll come back.
Dude, like, Wave the Dragon, and stuff like that, yeah?
Yeah.
Why not, man? Like, what the fuck's wrong with that? If we're going to do martial arts, are we going to have a martial arts tournament? That's fine. Like, fucking bring it on. Like, deathmatch tournament.
It's been done to death.
Yeah, well, dude, they do these things to death. That's what they do. That's what Hollywood does. They beat the dead horse again and again.
Not with Marvel movies.
Well, I'm not... If I sound slightly dubious, it's because my interest levels in Shang-Chi are generally quite low. I am interested from the sake of, like, if there are Asian audiences out there who feel like they haven't been represented, that kind of thing, and this is their big chance, okay. But I'm also, like, really, you know... I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I could imagine a lot of people being quite bored, you know, like by a full movie of this. Like, it doesn't sound that fucking exciting, frankly. And I love Bruce Lee, but it was like Bruce Lee back in the 70s. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. Look, you prove me wrong, Marvel. And like you said, Stu, I keep thinking when I see this, you know what I think? I think put Shang-Chi in like a Marvel Knights TV show. Like, you know, maybe a 20-part series, having Punisher in there, Ghost Rider, you know, lots of guys in there and girls in there. throw Shang-Chi as a character into that. Like, do I need, like, fucking a series of movies just on Shang-Chi? Not really. You know?
That's what I mean. Like,
I just feel like, give this guy some fucking variety. Otherwise, it will just be him fighting other martial artists, Stu. That's what it will be. And that's going to get dull pretty fast. Like, yeah. You know, and they'll wheel out, like, the other martial arts. Like, maybe Taskmaster will get wheeled out. Someone like that, you know, to fight against him. I don't know who Shang-Chi fought in the original series, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. It just doesn't sound that great. Now, Stu, there's talk of a Sesame Street movie starring Anne Hathaway, who's being circled on the project and is in talks to appear, according to the trades. We've discussed on the show recently, Stu, stuff like this. What do you think about a Sesame Street movie, like, coming back out? It's been a while since we've had this. You know, they're thinking of... Apparently, there's talk, like, the very first Sesame Street episode, they brought someone to Sesame Street, okay, to show them the street, and it's that kid growing up.
Oh, God, no, no.
That's one of the stories being pitched, man.
Please, like, don't do that.
Well, you know, dude, it's a magical fucking street. What can I tell you? Dude, you don't realize some of the most heartbreaking stuff in my childhood is, like, when I found out, like, the original cast members, like, die and stuff. Like, I struggled, man. Like, you know, like, the humans that were in Sesame Street. Like, at some point, these people retire and stuff and have to leave the street. Like, it used to fucking break me up, man. I was a big Sesame Street guy. But, like, I reckon for kids, like, this could be fucking cool. A big Sesame Street movie. Where are you?
I think Sesame Street's aimed at...
What is it aimed at?
At too young an audience to pull it off.
Mm.
It's not aimed at kids that want to go and see movies.
It's aimed at, like, I mean, young kids.
Exactly. And once they hit that barrier of, like, 5 years old,
sure,
they don't want to do baby things anymore. And Sesame Street is kind of seen as that.
But Elmo and stuff kicked on. You know, there were Sesame Street characters that broke through.
Yeah, the occasional character. But Bee not Bird, Sesame not Street, really?
I mean, it's kind of what you take the kids to go see. You know what I mean? Like, if you had small children.
If it gets happened, it'll be a very small release.
Do you think? Anne Hathaway, like, you know, a relatively big star. Apparently she's done Sesame Street stuff before.
I just don't see, like, who's the audience that they're targeting? Is it meant to be...
Oh, kids.
But is it meant to be a kids tens. Movie?
Under 10s, yeah, under 10s, yes.
But see,
yes.
There's no 7, 8, 9-year-olds that want to go and see a Sesame Street movie.
They're sort of just grown up out of it, haven't they?
Because they've hit that stage where it's like, that's what I did when I was a baby, now I'm at school.
When I was learning my
Now ABCs. I'm at, like, big school, not yeah. preschool. I'm doing big kids stuff, and I want to...
Hmm. But, I mean, some of these animated movies must be aimed at the very young. So this is like... this. I assume it's live action.
See, I think things like the Minecraft movie will be...
animated.
Of course it's animated, but I think it's going to be G-rated with the intention of getting those 5 to 10-year-olds in.
Okay.
Because that's the kind of thing that they go nuts for.
Yeah. It's. I mean, look, I've got a soft spot for Sesame Street, but, yeah, I would... I mean, they've done Sesame Street movies in the past. It has happened before. They did Elmo and Grouchland. Was a movie they did. I think it made decent money. They famously followed the bird, that bird, in, like, the early 80s. You know, Big Bird was big then. But Big Bird's not as big now as he was. He's kind of been overshadowed by some of the other pop culture things. I don't think Sesame Street is quite as... From my perspective, I know I'm a lot older. I love it. I wonder
Remember if the other thing popular. Is kids now have 1,000 different choices.
Yeah.
Whereas when you and I were growing up, Sesame Street was the only thing on in the mornings.
Yeah, and it was not a bad option, too.
No, it was great.
Yeah.
Like, I grew up with Sesame Street as well.
Who's your favourite out of all the Sesame Street, you know, characters, if you have to pick
a couple? It's tough. It's a toss-up between Ernie or Cookie Monster.
Cookie's great. Cookie's my favourite, so you know that. Cookie, Grouch, Oscar the Grouch. I always loved Oscar.
Of course you loved Oscar.
Cookie Monster was one of my favorites. But I liked lots. I liked Big Bird, obviously. But I was always a big fan of Snuffleupagus.
I never got on the Snuffleupagus bandwagon.
I used to love Snuffy. Snuffy was good. People give Snuffy shit. They can fuck off. Like, he was good. I still got emotional thinking about Snuffleupagus.
See, I'm 100% Bert and Ernie. I loved Ernie.
Bert and Ernie were great. They had an odd couple dynamic that just worked.
I loved that.
Yeah, no, I mean, who didn't? And to be honest, a lot of Sesame Street, from my memory, Bert and Ernie do a lot of the heavy lifting.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of Bert and Ernie scenes.
Yeah,
you know?
And there's a lot of Elmo.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot.
Elmo, for me, is an overrated Sesame Street monster.
Well, see, I'm old enough that Elmo was only... I was kind of pre-Elmo. He was around, but, like, he became huge in the 90s. Massive.
Yeah.
For me, he's okay, but he's not my Sesame Street. Like, my Sesame Street with Grover was kind of, like, big.
Oh, yeah, Grover was pretty big. And Grover he had the was count pretty- as well.
I love the count. One, two, three. He was good. The count was good. But who can beat Cookie Monster just tossing those cookies in his mouth? Of course, I loved him. Yeah. You know, he was a bit of an inspiration to me, actually.
I saw that inspiration out today. That was you channeling Cookie Monster.
Yeah, I tell you what I hate is I saw, like, a Sesame Street episode, like, years later, like, early 2000s. They turned Cookie Monster into, like, he doesn't eat cookies anymore or fucking eats them in moderation or something. I was like, what bullshit is this? Like,
I think for a brief period of time, they realized that they couldn't sell the health message of Cookie Monster, so they had a Salad Monster.
Fuck that.
Which just failed, like abysmally failed.
Here's my reaction to that.
Let's go back to Cookie Monster, but cookies are sometimes food now.
Yeah.
So Cookie Monster just starves and fasts for months on end, and then he gets a small fix.
But, like, you can't fool me. Cookie Monster's all about the cookies. He doesn't give a shit about health.
I love the scenes Cookie Monster gets in Family Guy.
What does he do?
Where he's a full-on heroin junkie.
Oh, no. Really?
Yeah.
But really?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's hilarious.
Jesus. How did they get away with that? Like, just literally Cookie Monster is a heroin junkie.
Yeah.
I guess Family Guy does a lot of
stuff. He's got the spoon out and he's shaking and, like...
I don't watch it.
Got his lighter out, he's ready to use it.
Really?
Yeah, they strap him to the bed.
Jesus Christ.
it's fucking hilarious. It sounds incredibly dark when you
it does sound very dark. Out. But then Family Guy is
Google like, it. Oh, it's hilarious.
Okay. All right. Now, the Starz Network finally has a season 2 premiere date for the troubled and delayed drama series American Gods. That's true. I thought this season 2 had come out. Like, American Gods, when it came out, I was so kind of into it, you know? Yeah. And I've got to be honest, I didn't make it through season 1. It
kind of fizzled a little
bit. Yeah, it fizzled. I thought season 2 had come and gone. Turns out it hasn't even come out.
For me, American Gods had really good episodes early on.
Yeah.
And they started experimenting a little bit more.
Mm.
And they struggled to get a through line going with the plot.
Man, it's one of my favourite books of all time, and I was a bit let down by the series. I love the fucking book. I love the book by Neil Gaiman. And Neil Gaiman wasn't as involved as what I hoped he was going to be. And they also sacked the showrunners, Brian Fuller, they left. And then the new showrunner came on, they sacked that person as well. They had a lot of budget problems. It's all in this big article. The series went down from like 12 or 13 episodes to 8. They've had budget issues. I don't know, I'm losing a lot of interest.
I really don't mind 8-episode series. When the show's an hour long,
yeah,
I think 8 keeps the storytelling tight.
Yeah.
You don't end up filling like 10 hours of dead air.
Well, dude, I only made it through 4 episodes of season 1, so...
I've heard that the season is bingeable.
Okay.
Like, if you sit down and watch 3 or 4 episodes in a hit and do that 2 or 3 times...
Okay.
You'll get through it and you'll actually enjoy it. It picks up.
Okay. All right. Well, the concept, I fucking love the concept.
We were watching it almost week, like 1 episode a week. Kind of
thing. Yeah, and that lasted for exactly 4 weeks.
And we struggled with that.
Yeah, I didn't find it. Like, I came in, my expectations were super high because I love the book. I fucking love the book, you know?
But put it this way, I imagine you get the same reaction if you tried to watch, say, like, season 2 of Luke Cage, 1 episode a week.
Sure.
I think you'd hit about 3 episodes and give up.
Yeah, well, so maybe some people have done that.
Some people did. But, I mean, it was released on streaming because you're meant to binge it.
Okay.
That's one of the things they intentionally now make shows.
Well, I tell you what, I did like the guy who played Shadow Moon, and I do like Ian McShane, who played Odin or Wednesday. So
Ian McShane's phenomenal.
He's excellent, yeah. So, I mean, I like the two leads, but I think probably I will go back and give it a try. I've got all the episodes. It can't be that bad. It's based on some awesome fucking material.
I think it just got weird more than bad.
Okay. Okay, well, the storyline is a bit weird. The storyline in the book is kind of like it's a road trip. You know, do you get to see, like, Easter? And I know you see media, but do you see the guy who runs the internet? Does he turn up?
I think so.
Because I loved his story in the book. I thought it was fucking cool.
I think he was there in episode 4 or something. Like, he started coming in when I started.
It's all, like, in his sunglasses and stuff. I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah. I think he was in the Big Stretch Limit, wasn't he?
I think so, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Because I think you and I got up to the same place.
Before, yeah, okay. I'm gonna go back and check it out. Now, Stu, Zombieland 2 begins production finally in January. This has been long fucking delayed. I love the original Zombieland.
Zombieland is a brilliant movie.
It's a great movie.
I'm hoping they can find someone else to cameo like Bill Murray did.
Oh, it's going to be so hard. Like, he was so fucking good.
Yeah, but can you imagine like a John Cleese or someone like...
Oh, good. That's a deep dive. It's very...
See, I'd like to have someone of that ilk.
Yeah. I'd like to see John Cleese, like, do almost, like, in a mini, you know, like how he was in Fish Called Wanda, kind of like he's just sick of it all. kind
of
thing.
Yeah.
Almost like a Basil Fawlty in the zombie land, you know, that kind of thing.
Struggling to find a new wife.
John Cleese, to me, one of the all-time greats.
Yeah, absolutely.
Seriously, one of the all-time greats.
But see, I'd love to see him in that, because he's got the kind of comedy that would match that level of...
I've never seen anything with John Cleese I don't like. He's just very good. Yeah. He attaches himself, and he writes a lot of his own material. Like, he's a very, very talented guy. He's very old now. Like, what, he'd be like mid-70s at least.
He's aged quite a bit in the last few years.
Yeah, and he's funny, though, still.
Yeah.
Fuck, he's funny.
Oh, yeah, the mind is still sharp.
Like, he just doesn't give a shit.
The mind is still very sharp.
He's one of those old guys who's got all the cash, and he doesn't give a shit.
But, like I could almost see, like, the remaining Python crew all doing the... Like, Eric Idle pops up, or Michael Palin shows up. Like, that could be a really cool...
Some of them are struggling, though. I think Terry Jones has got full-on dementia if he's not already dead.
Terry Jones is struggling. Eric Idle looks okay. He's still kind of performing musical numbers.
I'm sure Michael Palin's okay.
Well, Michael Palin's gone very quiet recently. He did a bunch of TV shows and traveling around the world.
Yeah, I used to find him very enjoyable, actually.
And then he kind of went really quiet in the last few years. So I'm thinking he's just
probably counting
all
money.
But just retired.
Yeah. He's probably counting his cash. They came back and did the Monty Python, you know, anniversary kind of special thing. Which was cool.
And John Cleese keeps popping up every time he gets a divorce.
Yeah, I know. I love John Cleese.
And he's got to fund the next divorce.
He just... The way he goes on about that is so funny.
Yeah.
He's just really, really amusing.
So, yeah, look, Zombieland 2, I love the original...
With all the original cast as well.
Yeah, which is fantastic.
Which is so necessary, because the cast just... Woody Harrelson was Stone. Jesse Eisenberg, who I normally can't stand, was perfect in that role.
Well, I mean, he just did Jesse Eisenberg.
He was good, though.
Like,
you know?
He wasn't even playing a character. That's just what he is in every movie.
He was just that funny part of the start.
The kind of nerdy, neurotic white guy.
And he lets that chick at the start sleep on his shoulder, and then she turns into the zombie.
Yeah.
And he thinks he's going to get lucky or something. Like, he can't believe his luck. Yeah, no, it's a very funny film. Now, Birds of Prey news. Margot Robbie was on Jimmy Fallon only, I think, last night. During her interview with Jimmy Fallon, Margot Robbie explained about the long title of Birds of Prey, which we covered last week, The Emancipation of Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
She explained, it's not a very serious movie, so we thought the title should reflect that. Birds of Prey makes it sound very serious. And the title is kind of like Harley adding, hey, I'm in this too. And then Margot Robbie went on to talk about her affection for long-winded movie titles in general, and confirmed the Birds of Prey starts production in early 2019 with Kathy Yan, Dead Pigs directing, and Christina Hodson, who also has written the Bumblebee script, which is getting a lot of heat, Stu. She's written the script for this. Now, there's a lot of people with their eyeballs on Bumblebee, because one of the big things is they're thinking that this could be the start of a whole reboot of the Transformers and keeping it more in line with Generation 1 Transformers. There's a lot of people talking about her script.
I mean, look, this Bumblebee movie does seem to be getting much better buzz than any Transformers since the first.
My God, I was so disappointed by the direction the Transformers franchise went in. And it made so much money, you just had to shrug and just think, well, you know, I'm not going to get the Transformers I want. Bumblebee could be the movie that, you know, kind of changes things up, Stu.
Could be. Look, personally, I'm still not going to see it. I'm burnt out on Transformers movie.
You're not going to check it out in the cinemas?
No. I'm so over Transformers movies at the moment.
I tell you what, when I was in Singapore, I went on to Universal Studios in Singapore, and I went on a Transformers 3D ride, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It was one of the most brilliant experiences on... And we didn't think it was going to be any good. You know what I mean? It had no line. It was one of the most brilliant experiences I've ever had. You know, what they did with a 3D kind of, like, moving... I don't know what they do, Stu, mm-hmm. but, like, make you feel like you're actually in the movie kind of thing. It was incredible. It made me think, imagine a full movie like that. It would probably make you fucking nauseous. But it was one of the best things ever. And yet, it was that Michael Bay Transformers kind of thing, but you just happened to be in it. You know, and all the Transformers were throwing you around and stuff. It was actually pretty fucking cool. It was probably the best ride I've ever been on in my life. But the movies themselves, somehow I find them incredibly long and dull. And it's like no amount of explosions can sort of, like, keep me interested, you know? I found the Transformers stuff some of the most disappointing kind of modern franchise movies that I can think of.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Anyway, so we'll see what happens with Bumblebee.
Just had no story. Look, let's be quite honest.
Mm.
The first Transformers movie had a story. Decepticons.
I enjoyed the first one.
Autobots versus Decepticons. Like, that's about as complex as it needs to be.
Yeah. Which is all it needs.
And then they started overcomplicating, like, oh, by the way, Transformers have been here for hundreds of years. Oh, no, they've been here for thousands of years. Oh, no, they were the entire moon. Like, they just keep getting more and more stupid and ridiculous.
Yeah, I just...
And then they were like, oh, no, it's millions of years they were dinosaurs.
Yeah, the Dinobots. Really? Well, yeah, I mean, which did connect with, like, I guess... The original Transformers Dinobots, but like
it was they tried to write a story about it.
Yeah, I know. And they
as opposed to just these Transformers who don't want to transform into cars.
Yeah,
they'd rather transform into giant fuck off lizards.
Well, there were Dinobots, like, but like the story sucked though. Is what
the
you
story
said.
Sucked?
Yeah, the story was almost
and
like
you can't sell that in $100 million movie.
It was almost like they had 10 minutes, and you and I had a copy each, and went, okay, we've got to come up with a story.
It's only they had about 10 coffees each.
Yeah,
and they're like, all right, script, and they just, like, word diarrhea.
I actually found them really boring, and it really disappointed me, because as a kid, Transformers and Batman, like, you know, cartoons, were basically my life.
Yeah.
I thought they were the greatest. And,
hey... You know, look, this isn't hard. If you're writing the next Transformers movie, it isn't hard. Get a Decepticon villain, have him fight the Autobots.
Yeah. Well, there's nothing wrong with Megatron. But, Stu, the thing is, this Bumblebee could be the beginning of the reboot. Like, I think the disappointing numbers in the last Transformers meant they finished with the Michael Bay stuff. Apparently, Bumblebee's looking a lot more like a Generation 1 Bumblebee. He does talk. It's not just, like, the radio talking. He speaks himself.
Are you sure?
Yes. Yes, confirmed. Confirmed. They've confirmed that during this week. Yes. So I'm just reporting stuff that's come out. I'm just saying,
okay, because the trailer that's out shows him not talking,
and apparently he does talk. It was confirmed. The studio or someone announced it like this week. So I don't know, but look, they're obviously. I think they're trying to make this the reboot, and then we all know they want to do a Hasbro connected universe eventually. Whether that will ever pan out,
I really don't know if it works though.
Do you need to? Like, what are you going to connect it with? Forget
G.I. Joe. Is there any other?
Yeah, I would be interested in seeing a G.I. Joe versus Transformers. I would actually be interested in that, but I'm not, like, dying for it.
Yeah, no, I'm not.
I mean, I would...
Like, we saw the Army versus Transformers. It was one of the Transformers movies.
Yeah, good point.
And everyone was like, get the people out of the way. I just want to see robot fight robot.
I'm not interested in
10 people fight robot. That's not interesting to me.
I always, as a kid, was whenever humans got involved in Transformers, I was like, get out of here.
Yeah. You know, imagine those humans have names and it's part of G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
But are you any more excited about
that? The G.I. Joe movie franchise, I think, could be done so much better separately, you know, by itself. Anyway, we'll see. There was an interesting article, Stu, sort of a talking point article Cinema Blend had up in reference to the latest Robin Hood movie, which completely bombed. And it was all about... why public domain characters keep failing at the box office. I read the article. I don't know if you did.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, it's an interesting article. I thought it made a lot of good points. Mostly a lot of it related to fatigue of the concepts. They're constantly trying to sort of fit these old, you know, properties onto very modern storytelling and trying to update them.
I actually disagree with most of this article.
Okay. What did you think then? Why? I mean,
they've got, I think it's four reasons. So they've got, the characters are overplayed, which I agree with.
Well, Robin Hood, I mean, they've gone back so many times.
Yeah, and things like King Arthur and King Kong and, like, we've seen those movies before, and we know the characters already.
Sure.
They've got the stories are no longer relevant, which I think is bullshit.
I would say Robin Hood is.
You can update any of those stories.
Robin Hood.
Not a problem.
Steal from the rich, give to the poor. I would think you could do a very good modern version.
Yeah, exactly. An overemphasis on origin stories.
Well, they just keep going back to the well.
Well, no, but they'll reboot a movie with an origin and it fails, so the next movie they'll reboot a movie with an origin.
Sure.
And I think that the problem comes back to the first issue. We know these characters already.
Yeah.
I don't want to see an origin of Robin Hood.
Yeah.
Like, I know what Robin Hood is about. I want to see him in conflict with someone else.
Well, Ridley Scott's Robin Hood took a very odd choice. Like, it ended with him entering Sherwood Forest.
Yeah.
I thought that was bizarre. Like, that was the weirdest choice of all. Make Robin Hood, but don't make it like Robin Hood. You know?
Yeah, that was a weird one.
Yeah.
The last two things I've got here are modern takes are too different from the original stories.
How was King Arthur? I never watched it.
No, neither.
Was it Guy Ritchie?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it got panned. I know that, but I didn't actually watch it. Yeah.
And the last point is the quality hasn't been there, which I think is the most redundant point ever.
Yeah.
Because that's true of any movie. If the quality's not there, people don't like it.
Yeah, it wasn't...
Like, regardless of whether it's a franchise movie or...
I find the article brings up an interesting concept but didn't explain it very well. But the concept of why they keep failing... But I could argue that Sherlock Holmes has been pretty successful, and that's a public domain. They've rebooted Sherlock Holmes a lot. And
recently, I mean, there's two current versions of him.
There's Robert Downey Jr., there's Elementary... There's...
You've got Elementary.
And what's his name? Will Ferrell's just put out something.
And Benedict Cumberbatch just got a new season of his Sherlock.
So, yeah, I mean, like, that's what I'm saying. Sherlock Holmes is a public domain, and he's very popular. They mentioned Dracula. They had a failed Dracula reboot, but Dracula's been done pretty successfully. Like, you know, I would say that we're ready for another Dracula movie.
I mean, we had a flop that came out a couple of years ago.
Yeah, the movie that was supposedly going to kick off the Universal Monster franchise and then did flop so badly they just kind of pushed it to the side.
Yeah.
I would be down for another Dracula. I think you could do a cool Dracula movie again. I still think Dracula is, like, the coolest of all the vampires, you know.
Well, see, for me, it's... You could just run any vampire, though.
Yeah, but Dracula is the first one.
Yeah, but they kind of shoot themselves in the foot by naming him. Because expectations go through the roof.
Yeah. Well, he's the king of the vampires, yeah.
Yeah, but if you just said it's a vampire movie, sure. And you had a really cool vampire movie,
yeah,
and there was a lead, but it wasn't Dracula,
sure.
I think that still works.
Well, they've done many a vampire movie. Wasn't fucking Twilight? Vampires?
Well, yeah, well, vampires and werewolves and yeah. Who knows,
I mean,
what.
And Underworld.
Yeah, but that was a really shit... Like, the vampires sparkled in the same
incredibly fucking popular, is what I'm trying to say. Like,
they're incredibly fucking shit.
I agree.
Their vampires sparkled. I don't think we can over, like,
but I'm thinking,
that.
Like, Underworld franchise that was vampires, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And, like, you look at Blade. Like, Blade was a fantastic movie franchise.
Give me Blade.
Until they introduced bloody Dracula in number 3.
Yeah, Blade 3 is definitely the weakest of the lot.
Yeah, and that was the one where they went, oh, let's bring Dracula back.
Yeah.
Because every other fucking vampire that would rip your face off wasn't good enough.
So you wouldn't be interested... The Dracula movie I'm thinking of is kind of like doing kind of how...
I think this article makes a good point saying that when you do a character that's public domain, as opposed to a spin on that genre, people already know that character. So you can't run another origin. We're bored of seeing that story. Sure. Because we've seen a Dracula origin...
Yeah.
We've seen movies that are set around, like, the first of the werewolves going to sleep and waking up thousands of years later and terrorizing modern-day Earth.
Yeah.
We've seen that. We've done that. That's not exciting.
So what are you saying, though? Like, don't do it, or...?
I'm saying don't do Dracula. Do vampires. Vampires are still absolutely fertile ground.
Oh, yeah.
We've seen success recently. We've seen success throughout history in vampires.
Oh, there's so much vampire fiction out there. There's
exactly.
Crazy amounts.
So vampires, not a problem.
Vampires, to me, are so interesting still, if done well.
Because you could take any really good story and just put vampires in there pretty easily.
I'll tell you a good movie.
You put Dracula, the name Dracula, in there.
Yeah.
You've got expectations.
It brings the whole weight of...
You've made it a lot harder for yourself.
And we've kind of enshrined him, not just in books, but in cinema, like Bela Lugosi and those kind of people enshrined a certain look and ethos about Dracula.
Well, yeah, you get the double-edged sword. Like, with the name Dracula, because of that brand recognition, people already know... vampire, king of the vampires.
Kind of like the noble vampire.
They know he can transform into a bat.
Puff of smoke.
The smoke, the silver and garlic.
Yeah.
Like, they already know a bunch of things about him before even seeing the movie.
Sure.
So you've built up some of the name already.
What did you think of Francis Ford Coppola's movie, Bram Stoker's Dracula? I thought it had some interesting moments in it.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too. I thought Francis Ford Coppola, a fantastic filmmaker, gave us a good movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yes, it has its flaws. Yes, Keanu Reeves is very weak in it. But overall, I thought it was a pretty interesting piece. And I dare say someone's going to be hard-pressed to top it in modern-day times. Now they're going to try to make it more action-heavy, you know, as opposed to kind of
more... Well, we've now got access to CGI.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you use that in giant epic battles?
Yeah.
Lord of the Rings kind of
thing. What about making a kind of more fantasy-based one with vampires? Like, they haven't done that, like, too hardcore. Or making, like, World War Z with vampires. You know what I mean? Like, instead of zombies, it's vampires. That kind of thing. Yeah. Like, that's kind of where my mind goes, if we're really going to kind of...
You could do that. I mean, you're heading down the post-apocalyptic kind of road again.
100%.
Where you pick up the story after vampires have won the war over people.
So you know which road I always go down. you know, you've spotted a trend.
I mean, yeah, you kind of end up in the same place every time. So.
My worldview.
Yeah.
Guess what, Stu? It's going to get a little dark.
Oh, yeah.
Bring your garlic. Bring your garlic. Bring your garlic. Your fucking whatever it is else. You know, one thing that annoys me, this is a problem I have, if I'm one of those people, if there's a vampire movie, I like the vampires to sort of follow the rules. I don't like it if the vampires can stand sun. I don't like it if the vampires are seen in mirrors. You know, I like my vampires to not be seen in mirrors, that kind of thing. I'm kind of old school with my rules. Where are you on the rules of vampires? Like, I like the
See,
vampire.
And I think that right there is the problem with having Dracula.
Okay.
Because you have to associate Dracula with all those things.
Well, for example, one thing they do really well that they've done in modern stuff is you have to invite the vampire into your house. I think it's a really good rule. Like...
Yeah, and cannot walk on holy ground.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's, cannot enter a church regardless.
Mm.
And cannot walk on any land that's been blessed.
I tell you, some people who've done really good vampire novels recently. Chuck Dixon did one, Blooded, and Larry Hammer. I don't know if you know Larry Hammer. He was a big G.I. Joe writer and editor at Marvel, did a lot of work. He did a really good vampire novel recently, like in the last couple of years. Check out Larry Hammer's novels, and he's got a vampire novel. I read it when I was in Hawaii, Stu. It's you cannot put it down. You know what I mean? It's pulpy, fun. It's excellent. Chuck's one is great. A real estate agent, Stu, basically gets turned into a vampire, and he's just this loser of a guy. Like, he's just a total sort of everyman. You know what I mean? And he gets turned into a vampire, and it's actually a really, really interesting story from Chuck called Blooded that I believe he's had some interest in. So, yeah, I mean, I think you're right. Vampires themselves are fascinating, but you're saying you throw the Dracula tag in, suddenly it takes on a whole different spin.
Yeah, same as if you had a story about a band of people that were stealing from, like, Fortune 500 companies and then giving it to charities.
Yeah.
But it was like a heist movie.
Sure.
Slash like a hustle type thing.
Yeah.
Like, that'd be super interesting. But as soon as you say Robin Hood,
yeah,
everyone's like, okay, so he's going to be wearing green and having a bow and arrow?
Yeah, but I'm surprised that if that hasn't been done, that it's not done already. Like, just updating it to modern.
Like, the idea of taking from the rich and giving to the poor.
Would you be against the guy being called Robin Hood or Robin?
You could call him Robin, but yeah. I don't know why you bother.
No, I mean, but the concept of it, like, because the concept of
that's
it,
like, that's the interesting part. Robin Hood himself, that character in most of his stories, have been done.
Hmm.
Unless you're going to redo it better.
One of the biggest things in my life as a kid growing up, I was watching Ivanhoe, the classic movie. I think they did it, like, in the, you know, 60s or something. That, you know, the Crusader who comes back to England.
Yeah,
And I'm watching the movie and I'm loving it because I'm a young kid, I'm obsessed with the Crusades. Suddenly he's in this forest and who pops in but Robin Hood, and my jaw just dropped and I was like, oh my God, it's Robin Hood. And that was like, you know, they literally, back in the old days, they actually crossed streams, you know, and like, oh, I was like, this is amazing. And like, he helps out fucking Ivanhoe somehow and then he like disappears into the forest. I don't know, but like, that was kind of, I thought Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. See, I think Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves did about as well as you could do it.
Exactly.
And like
we've seen it done well. That's the problem.
Yeah.
We don't need to see the same story done again.
Well, it feels like they've tried and tried and tried. Like, this latest Robin Hood seems to be kind of like, let's do Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves again. You know?
Yeah.
But
let's have a much, like, worse cast.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, everything's about it's worse. Yeah, there's no Morgan Freeman, there's no Kevin Costner, you know,
no,
et
cetera. No.
And the guy...
Instead, we've got Jamie Foxx and Taron Egerton.
And look, Alan Rickman, I believe, was in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, and he was awesome.
Alan Rickman's awesome in
everything. Yeah, no, so I definitely agree with Stu. I think the idea of putting it in modern times... Because, I mean, I on my Facebook friend page, some of the guys... You know, we have all types of follow the signal, and there's a few guys out there who are pretty hardcore, like, leftist. And they're pretty, like...
But you could very easily, like, today, have someone that's running a group of hackers that kind of take on some of the big tech companies.
Well, there's people out there who believe that kind of shit and, like, tear it all down.
I mean, you kind of run the spin of Robin Hood and all those kind of Snowden stories at the moment.
Yeah.
Well, people say that, you know, he was taking information from the rich and giving it to everyone.
How hilarious is it that people like Snowden are currently... living at the mercy of Vladimir Putin in Russia. You know, the great fucking, like, information, like, releases of all time. And they're literally in the thrall of Putin. It's hilarious to me. Like, you know, they've released all this stuff in the name of freedom, and they're currently at the hands of a Russian fucking tyrant, basically. You know, like, or, you know, not exactly a beacon of democracy there, is all I'm trying to say.
Yeah, no, like, no, not exactly.
I find that
kind like of, Assange, who's just gone from embassy to embassy.
Yeah, it's just, it's pathetic, but, you know, it is.
Where is he now? The Ecuadorian embassy?
Ecuadorian embassy, and they want to kick him out. He's fighting them kicking him out.
He's overstayed his welcome.
I'm surprised I don't get a fucking bouncer to drag him out onto the street. That's what I would do.
Yeah.
It's like, get out of the fucking embassy. You don't want to.
Yeah, there's plenty of spins you could do on those kind of stories that have a Robin Hood spin.
Yeah, definitely.
Where they're doing it for the good of the many as opposed to the few.
And Stu, like, based on what I've seen, like, not me, I'm fucking...
Depending on how you want to spin it, it's very easy to do.
But like, there are people out there who believe this kind of stuff anyway. So, you know, it's...
Well, I mean, Assange and Snowden believe that. That's the kind of method behind their...
I'm sort of surprised they haven't done this. It feels like it's a story kind of made for our times, you know? Like,
I think if you do a story based, like, specifically on people like that, you run the risk of polarising your audience.
Sure.
Because half of the audience is automatically going to think, yes, he was doing it for good, and the other half are going to think, no, he's a traitor.
Well, I'm thinking of doing it like imagine Heat mixed with Robin Hood. You know, the movie Heat?
Like Melissa McCarthy? Are you talking about The Heat?
No, Heat. No, I'm not talking about that fucking woeful movie.
What are you on about?
I'm talking about Heat, the Robert De Niro, Al Pacino movie, the Michael Mann movie.
That makes a lot more sense.
Okay. So a crime movie, but there were sympathetic characters on both sides, remember? Like, you sympathised with Robert De Niro's character, even though he's a flat-out fucking, like, robber.
Like Ocean's 11, Italian Job.
Well, Ocean's 11 and Italian Job took a more comedic route, but Heat was a flat-out drama. I love Heat. It's one of my favourite movies of all time. It's in my top three movies.
Have you ever seen the TV show, the British one, Hustle?
Yeah.
One of my favourite TV shows ever.
I would actually be interested in watching that.
Oh, I love it so much.
I actually would be, because I like the British kind of like style of that kind of thing. Like Lock, Stock, for example.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is, TV show as opposed to movie, but... Yeah. I'd love to see that.
I'm saying you could do it. I think one of the risks they also do, and the impression I got from the modern Robin Hood, is they go for sort of a comedy. I would do it more as a drama. You know, I think that like Prince of Thieves definitely had a lighter tone, but it feels like the new Robin Hood was definitely going for a lighter tone from what I saw. Kind of lighter slash action. Why not do it as more of a serious drama and update it to the modern world? I think it actually could have some legs. Because we've gone back to Sherwood Forest too many times, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing. For me, as soon as you say Robin Hood, you date the film.
Yeah.
It's set in Sherwood. It's set in that forest. It's set in that time zone.
Yeah.
You can't have a Robin Hood with a bow and arrow walking around in 21st century.
No.
In any major city.
He doesn't need to have a bow and arrow. Sherwood could be the name of the computer servers or something he uses. You know what I mean? Like, it could be a code name or something.
Potentially, it could be the name of the virus that he makes or something.
Whatever, like, yeah, it doesn't need to be.
There's plenty of ways around
it. I don't need him
the
to
problem
shoot
is, the more you kind of force those names into a movie, the cheesier it gets.
True.
If you had a guy named Robin who only wore hoodies, and he
Stu, you know he'd wear a hoodie. He's going to wear a hoodie.
And he attacks people using viruses called Sherwood.
Sherwood.
And his best friend, Tuck. And, like, it's just, you end up, like, reading it going, oh, fuck, just kill me now.
And Little John. Does he fight him on a bridge?
Lil Jon the rapper. Lil Jon.
And they have a rap battle instead of a fight on a log.
Oh, God, that sounds bad.
Yeah, because I always felt that was one of the weakest parts.
But, they could absolutely force that.
Yeah, but
they could force, like, 100 references to the original Robin Hood.
I like it, our concept, though, of what you're talking about more than anything. More than any shit about, like, force the names. You know, I like the concept of what you're saying. I think the concept has some value.
And that's been done 100 times.
Yeah, well...
And that's why I kind of look at this article and I'm like, well, no. The
people who write these articles, dude, they need to get the words out. You know what I'm saying? It's like, why is the sky blue? Well, let me tell you. There's four reasons why. Blah, blah, blah. And that article was particularly, like, just blah, 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 blah. It went blah, 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 blah. Like, it was kind of repeating itself.
And just for listeners, the sky is blue because of Rayleigh's fracturing.
Because of what?
Rayleigh's law. Rayleigh's fracturing.
Okay, Stu. I mean, was this an opportunity for you to show your science knowledge? I don't know.
Yes, it feels like you asked a legitimate science question for once.
I was asking a rhetorical question, but I'm glad you...
Well, there's an actual answer, though. Legitimate question. Well done, okay, good question.
Now, okay, welcome back, Stu. I'm just recovering from, you know, you're accusing me of a massive sugar high crash.
I'm surprised you're not. Yeah, you're just coming down a little bit, because...
Coming down.
Today was a bit of a constant grazing day for you.
Well, grazing, I mean, yeah, grazing like Cookie wants to fucking graze. Razors, you know, like...
Yeah, but you destroying. Do a little drive-by destroy. every like, half hour to an hour, you just kind of go, no, I've got some business to attend to near the kitchen.
Yes, in the... What a surprise, but there is some food.
Let's go and have a chat with IT. Oh, look, IT, next to the kitchen.
No, actually, I do that. I go and chat to
IT. You do that. You do that regularly.
And then go and
only on Fridays, though.
Yes, yeah, you just got to bounce
every other day of the week, you just call him up, like, get the fuck over here. Yeah. And on Fridays, you're like, no, I'm coming to you.
Exactly.
While I'm here.
Now, Stu, you probably wisely, have deleted what I was going to spoil, the Aquaman mid-credits. You've deleted it. I didn't read it, even, so I don't even know what it was.
I read the first and last paragraph.
Sure, okay.
So,
anything good?
I don't know. It just felt very spoilery.
Well, it was a spoiler from people who watched the previous screenings.
Yeah. So, look, we'll cover it, but we'll cover it once the movie's out and people have had a chance.
Fair enough. Okay.
I just feel like a week or two before the movie comes out.
I was trying to get us ahead of the news cycle, man. But maybe that would attract more controversy.
It's very spoilery.
The world of Kevin Smith is already fucking banned.
It's incredibly spoilery.
Oh, fair enough. Okay. Well, fair enough. We'll wait till we do the full review. Are we going to do... I'm in the mood to do scene by scene, like we did for Last Jedi, remember?
I hope the movie's good, because it's got to be good to warrant that. Like, that's...
But remember Last Jedi? It took about 7 hours. It felt like it went longer than the fucking movie.
I'm absolutely ready to do that for Avengers, the next Avengers film.
Well, you're the one who has to remember all the scenes. If you remember Last Jedi, I completely forgot most of it.
Yeah, you really did. And you were fresh out of that cinema as well, and you just had nothing.
I know. Now,
strong blanks everywhere. Luke, who? What? So confused and old.
Reports suggest there was friction between Netflix and Disney over the season lengths of their collaborative Marvel television series. Netflix reportedly wanted to trim the series count to 6 to 8 episodes, reducing the cost and guarding against quality drop. What do you think, Stu?
We've heard this before. That Marvel and Disney wanted to have longer seasons.
Mm. Just to milk it more? Because it seemed like it was long enough to me.
Well, I think the idea was they'd have longer seasons but shorter episodes.
Oh, okay.
And then it gives them more opportunity to put in more cliffhangers, have more crossovers.
Okay.
As you build, it becomes more useful.
Sure.
Because you can have one episode where, you know, Iron Fist and Luke Cage are in the same... town fighting the same
normal bag. Network shows have 22 episodes, you know.
Yeah, and like dedicating a whole episode to a single character that comes in,
yeah,
is not a big issue.
No,
when you've got 6 episodes,
yeah, it's harder.
It's very because you've got to budget your time pretty carefully.
Personally,
I agree with Netflix 100% on Netflix's side here.
6 to 8
episodes in a season is almost the perfect length if they're hour-long episodes.
But, dude, like, I mean, look...
Because you never suffer from the problem that The Walking Dead has suffered,
which is
you have a few hours of great TV and then 10 hours of wake me up when it's done.
Well, you have episodes where it feels like nothing happens.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of talk about
stuff. Which happens with almost every show where there's 22 episodes.
Sure, okay.
Like, if you've ever tried binge-watching a show where there's 22 episodes in a season...
Mm.
There's some real stinkers in there.
Sure.
Regardless of what it is.
Yeah, no, I agree.
When you cut it down to 6 to 8, you're kind of forced to focus on what is important.
But, like, what about Daredevil Season 3? Everyone fucking raves about how great it was. That was 13. Would you have wanted it to be shorter? I thought that was, you know...
It could have been shorter.
Dude, I don't want Punisher just to be 6 to 8.
Because put it this way, in Daredevil Season 3, they had a whole episode devoted to Foggy's backstory. A whole episode devoted to Karen's backstory.
Interesting.
Interesting, but neither of them were necessary.
Yeah, but if you liked that actress, it was good.
So you could very easily cut out those two.
But, dude, she was, like... I mean, I'm going to stand up for that actress here. Like, she gave a phenomenal performance.
Absolutely, but a whole episode dedicated to the backstory where, like, her brother dies and she blames herself.
Sure.
I mean, we already knew...
You feel like it could be covered in a scene.
Well, maybe 20 minutes.
Sure, I hear. Yeah. No, I get you. They're squeezing it kind of thing.
Yeah, you could very easily shorten that to 13 to 10, and have the quality, if anything, go up.
No, I hear. Well, Defenders was 8 or 9 episodes, and I thought it was quite good.
Yeah, absolutely, it was punchy.
Yeah, definitely. Well, anyway, I mean, it's all a moot point anyway because they've all been cancelled, and we know that Jessica Jones and Punisher are going to be the two last ones, and then they're going to wrap the whole thing.
I mean, look, you can't run it too short, but it's the same as like when you're editing one of your books.
Mm. Yep, yeah, you don't want it to run 600 pages.
Like, when you do your first draft of this book and it comes out and it's like 500 pages.
Yeah.
And they go, okay.
Chop it down.
You need to get to 300. You go, okay, well, I need to keep this, and this, because those are my big pieces. Those are my character key moments.
Yep.
And that's where the real quality is. And you kind of trim around the excess.
Well, you write a second draft and you chop it down and then chop it down again and you keep chopping.
Yeah.
Rewriting and.
And occasionally some things you'll chop and you'll regret. Occasionally.
Oh, there's like, in the instant of realizing you're not going to use some stuff, there's sort of regret, but it's very rare that at the end you don't think, okay, this is, you know, better.
It's yeah, exactly right.
You kind
of, and I think that's what they're doing here. They're not cutting it down to, like, one episode.
No.
And it's not like one movie where you've only got maybe 2.5 to 3 hours max.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. I mean, look, oh, I certainly thought that Luke Cage and Iron Fist were incredibly long for what information was in them.
Yeah.
Personally, I mean, I still haven't, like, really watched Iron Fist for that exact reason. It's just too fucking long and it's not that interesting.
Agreed.
Whereas Daredevil, I found it a lot more enjoyable kind of thing. So, I mean, I don't know. Like, yeah, I get your point. 6 to 8, yeah, it worked for Defenders.
It probably tends to be more of the British model as opposed to the American.
Well, I think Luther only has...
For a long time there, American shows, generally speaking, had the 22, 23 episodes.
Oh, yeah, for a long time.
And they were all 22 minutes long, meant to sit in a half-hour time slot with adverts.
Sure.
Whereas the British model was more 6 to 8 episodes, but they're an hour long with no adverts.
Yeah. Luther, for example, that kind of thing.
Yeah, or Sherlock just come out, like, yes. Benedict Cumberbatch's Sherlock. Yeah,
limited series.
6 episodes, but hour long.
How many, we're going to go into our next point of Doctor Who, how many episodes of Doctor Who?
This coming week will be the 8th and final for this season.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. The 8th. I thought we were already at 9.
Well, I'm pretty sure we're at 7, aren't we?
I'm not sure.
Currently? Okay. I think we're at 7. I could be wrong.
No, we've definitely... The last one was the 9th episode, so...
So they're doing 10.
10. Okay, 10. So it's quite short as well.
Yeah.
And they're about 45 minutes, aren't they?
Or 50? They're around 50. They're designed to be played roughly in an hour.
Okay, all right. That leads us into what I thought was our last discussion point in kind of news discussion. Both of us Doctor Who fans.
Yeah.
Both of us like classic and modern. I know you came to modern first.
Yep.
And then back. I obviously am old. And
very old. The classic. Let's not understate that.
But I do like the modern a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've got into the new Doctor. I've watched 8 episodes so far. The last one I watched was the Witchfinder one.
Same.
Okay, there's one more episode that's come out since I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat.
Okay, now Michelle and I have watched them all. My take on her and the show is I think she's very lighthearted. I really enjoy her. Some of the episodes I haven't been so enthralled with themselves, but I found the Witchfinder episode excellent, and some of the episodes I've really enjoyed. I like her a lot. I think the material, you know, has some points that I'm not as... You know, they're not all great episodes, but overall I've really enjoyed it. The companions are good. I like the companion team. I like the older guy a lot. I think the black guy could do with a bit more time. I like the policewoman, you know, the Indian or Pakistani. I really enjoyed that episode where they went back to the partition.
Okay, yeah.
And overall...
That was really, actually a really good episode, that one.
I really enjoyed it. And I liked the Rosa Parks episode. I liked the one in the future where they went to the medical. And I really liked the Witchfinder episode. It was actually probably my favourite. I like the Doctor. I think she's very lighthearted. And I must admit, I like a lighthearted Doctor. Where are you?
Originally, I loved this Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great change of pace, lighthearted, fun.
Sure.
A little bit camp, but I think that fits with the Doctor.
Yeah.
Since it's started to wane a little bit,
mm-hmm.
She's kind of become a little too camp and overacting quite a bit.
She's quite cheesy.
Very cheesy. And she does overact. I think that's...
Well, she's almost playing a sort of, like, very exaggerated sort of style.
Yeah.
Mm.
Having said that, like you said, there's been a lot of strong episodes. Mm. The companions, 2 out of 3, have done really well.
Mm-hmm.
Not a fan of, is it Ryan?
Who's he? Which one?
The young guy.
Well, he's the black guy I'm talking about. He's not.
I was talking to my friends about him, and we're all kind of in the same boat.
It's like invisible, like, almost.
Well, we kind of went, so what's the deal with the disability that they keep bringing up? In that he's hesitant to climb a ladder. Like, is that a... And then one of my friends, I won't
name... He's got coordination problems.
Yeah, but he says it's like a disability. It's not just a...
No, he in the first episode, he couldn't ride the bike. I think he's actually got some sort of problem with his coordination.
Yeah, and we all kind of agreed that it was good that they were telling us that he's not able, as opposed to Mickey, the last companion, the black companion they had, where it took us a season or two to realise that he was a retard. That is, didn't tell us that he's a retard. He's the worst character.
Who?
Mickey.
I'm trying to remember.
Exactly. Rose's boyfriend.
Okay, yeah.
The black guy that kept showing up.
Oh, yeah,
kept fucking up and then kept leaving.
I do remember that.
Yeah, they've now got a new black guy who kept showing up, fucking up.
Did he have a medical problem?
Yeah, he was retarded.
Are you allowed to say that now?
No.
Yeah, I was going to say, Stuart.
He's not. We were just saying that because he's a terrible character.
Oh, right. Okay, sorry.
You're so far off the ball today, Dave.
No, I was confused. Like, so, yeah, but this guy's actually got a medical problem.
Apparently. He can't climb ladders quickly.
No, I think he's got a... Well, I think his medical issue is that he's got... If I remember, he's got, like, coordination problems. Like, he couldn't go... If you remember, he couldn't go down the chute. That he did, though?
Yeah, but he did. He was the first one to do it.
I know.
Not only that, but he jumped into it.
But my problem isn't even just his medical issue. I think it's a character. The guy's not given much to work with at all. He's not given a lot of lines, even.
No, he's not a good character.
Yeah, like,
It feels to me like it was meant to be... the two younger companions were meant to spin off as a kind of couple, and the grandfather was meant to disappear after a couple episodes.
I like the grandfather.
But then Brad Welsh comes along and knocks it out of the fucking park.
Is that the actor?
Yeah. And everyone goes, well, it's Brad Welsh. How are we going to fight? Let's just keep him going, because he's amazing.
I think he's really good. I don't know who he is. He looks like he's been in 1,000 episodes of a soapy or something. Like,
he has. He's also he's the host of The Chase.
Okay.
In the UK.
Okay. So he's well known.
Yeah, really.
I mean, I looked at him, I'm like, I know this guy has been around, I don't know who he is, but he's really good.
No, he's been around in England for decades. Okay,
I also want to say I do like the Pakistani police woman as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
A lot. I think she's really good. Yeah, I think she's really good. And I almost think the black guy just doesn't have anything to do. He's not given much.
No, honestly a waste of a character. Mm.
How funny was, what's the guy's name, Alan Cumming?
As King James.
King James, hilarious. I thought that was really, really well done. I really liked that episode a lot. I thought it was an excellent episode. I'm enjoying it. Like, I mean, I'm not a very harsh critic of Doctor Who. I love Doctor Who as a brand.
Yeah.
Peter Capaldi, I thought, was a really good actor, but I lost so much interest in him.
Peter Capaldi had terrible episodes to run with.
Yeah. Killed me.
He kind of really had an unfortunate timing in that he came into the show when it was at its weakest point in years.
Mm.
It had kind of fallen back down to where Christopher Eccleston had it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what's his numbers leaving, wasn't he?
Well, when Eccleston left, we'd had two brilliant doctors back to back.
Excellent doctors, yeah.
Like, Tennant and Smith were incredible, and back to back is amazing.
Michelle and I, Matt Smith to us, I love David Tennant, don't get me wrong, but we watched, her first doctor was Matt Smith. She watched from the first episode. We loved it with a passion. I really related to that character. And when she put the fez on, I was like, oh, my God, I love this personification.
Yeah.
I really like it.
Yeah, because she got that ordered from the... Yeah.
I love that episode about the Amazon, like, the, you know, clear taking off Amazon.
Yeah, massively.
Love that episode. To be honest, I, at one point, was going, I'm enjoying her, but the stories, a couple of her early stories were really not landing with me. But then I made myself pay more attention, and I watched the Amazon one and the Witchfinder one, and I really switched back into it.
Amazon for me was actually a low point.
Didn't like it?
Exploiting bubble wrap, I think, is a stretch.
Yeah, it wasn't. Yeah, I mean...
It wasn't great.
I liked the episode.
There was tongue-in-cheek humour directly at Amazon.
Yeah.
Which I enjoyed.
Right.
But the episode as a whole was a little too...
It was lightweight.
Yeah.
Look, she's, at the moment, I think, giving a very sort of light-hearted performance. I imagine she's got some other gears she'll go to if she stays with the role.
We've not seen, and next episode, the episode 10, we do get to see a long-return villain.
Okay. Do we? Do we know who?
Yes, we do, but I won't spoil it for anyone that hasn't seen it, because okay. It comes out next week.
Okay, cool.
And we haven't really seen that yet.
And I don't mind
we've not
that,
seen a Master or Daleks or Cybermen or any of the kind of long-running villains, so she hasn't really had to be the kind of serious speech-giving doctor that Matt Smith was famous for.
Yeah, but I think she's got it in her. I don't know this actress at all, but I like what I've seen. I mean, I think she's good at what she does. And
In terms of, like, she acting, she's better than what she's shown. Because I think she is playing it over the top and campier than she normally
would. She's playing it a bit sort of,
to me, it keeps feeling like a kid's show.
Yeah.
Where she's smiling just that little bit too much.
But the Doctor is big with kids. Like, the Doctor always has had kid appeal as well. Like, he is a friend.
Absolutely. But, like, if you go and watch, like, a show meant for kids, like Play School or a Sesame Street or something, the presenters will smile just a little bit too much for an adult.
Yeah.
Like, you're watching it and thinking, how good is her acting skills, you're going to be disappointed.
Because they're trying to connect with the children.
Because they're trying to make everything a little bit too happy for kids.
Yeah.
I get the feeling that Jodie Whittaker's doing a little bit of that.
I mean, you could argue... I agree, but you could argue that Tom Baker, I mean, he really went down the comedy route a lot. He was one of the...
Yeah, but he was the first one to really go down that road. And he pushed it as far as he could.
He pushed it a long way.
To kind of see if it landed.
But he also had gravitas when needed.
Exactly.
I mean,
we haven't really seen that from Jodie Whittaker.
Not yet. I wouldn't be surprised to see that turn, though, would you?
No, and I think it's coming. I think if we're going to see it, it's going to be with a returning villain.
Yeah, I don't know who the villain is. I'm excited to see it. I mean, Doctor Who's got so many great villains, you know?
Yeah.
And frankly, I'll make this point. Although I like the modern stuff, I have felt, and I've mentioned on the show before, that I often feel they don't stick the landing. I often feel that the wrap-ups of Moffat were underwhelming.
The build-up is where he really works.
I mean, I felt that is.
I mean, when you go back to like Tennant, there were two build-ups there that were phenomenally well done, and then the final episode, you're kind of a little bit let down.
Yeah, yeah.
So when he first introduced the Master,
yes,
and the Doctor kind of with Captain Jack went to the end of time, basically, wound up on that planet talking to this old man.
Yes,
and then there was this brilliant turnaround that he became the Master, travelled back in time, left them stranded there, and kind of set up his empire. That was an amazing kind of build-up. And John Sims as the Master was incredible.
Oh, he was great. He was excellent.
And then the next one around was when Rose was coming back for the first time, and she was appearing throughout the season. It was with Catherine Tate as the accomplice.
Yeah, I love that.
And then in that second-to-last episode, she goes into that fortune teller's tent.
Vaguely, yeah.
And has the giant beetle thing on her back, feeding off time energy.
Yeah.
And she wakes up and Rose has given her a message, which was bad wolf, and the Doctor just, panics, sprints, and you're like, that is incredible build-up. A season of seeing a character in backgrounds that the characters themselves didn't notice. To have one reveal, which was two words.
You're reminding me of a...
And yet everybody knows exactly what the fuck happened. You finally got to see the Shadow Proclamation. Like, you saw all these things that they've been talking about for seasons.
But that feels like a long time ago as well.
It was. And then two episodes later, you're kind of like, oh, that's how it ends? okay.
Yeah, look, let's wait and see with this one. They've got a new, team behind it all. They're obviously changing a few things around. Like, the show's definitely got a different feel. It probably needed to change it up.
Probably. I mean, you're not going to hit those highs again like that.
No, they have to build up.
And you saw, Matt Smith had the Pandorica opening. And that speech where he was, standing in Stonehenge, giving that speech to every race. That was incredible.
Matt Smith pushed humour as well. Matt Smith was heavy on the humour,
Yeah, he kind of went a little quirky. And then Capaldi tried to... He took that same quirkiness and went too far.
And that you can see the challenge for an actor, because it's like, we want you to be quirky and funny, and it's like, but we want you to be dramatic.
Yeah, they said quirky, and Matt Smith took that as wear a bow tie and talk about fezzes a lot.
Yes.
And that's quirky enough.
Yeah.
And then Capaldi went for sonic sunglasses and electric guitars.
Well, some of that must come down to the writers and basically the guy, the showrunner as well.
They did. But that was a step too far.
I agree. I mean, it lost me, frankly.
Yeah, it did.
Anyway, we'll wait and see. I mean, I'm I will say this, though. I've never been a harsh critic of Doctor Who. I stuck with it through some terrible years. And I've always been so thrilled that it came back, because it was gone from screens for so long. Gone from screens from, like, 1999 to 2005. That's a long time.
Yeah.
And
with,
it really has
one
been
one very mediocre movie in the interim.
It was a real disappointment.
And that was it. That was all the Doctor we got.
Yeah, and I remember the hype for that and the hopes.
I remember being so disappointed. Like, McGann, I thought, was going to be really good.
Yes, and he wasn't. And the movie wasn't good.
No, but I just remember, like, wanting him to be good.
Yeah, it was. There was
he
a lot.
He had one of the best costumes, and he looked great.
It just wasn't a very good.
And then it just fizzled.
Yeah, it wasn't good.
Song for the broken hearted.
Now, Stu, it's weekly comics. I picked the comics this week, Stu. Shazam number one, we'll kick it off with that one. Jeff Johns back with Shazam,
yeah.
Following off on the, I think, the New 52 run.
Yeah.
For me, this was a nice introduction with some good character moments and slick visuals. What did you think?
Yeah, really fun. A nice way to introduce the Shazam family again.
They were a lot of fun, weren't they?
Yeah, they kind of had a bit of fun with the names, which I liked.
Yes.
Light-hearted humour. They introduced this whole new magical kind of realm inside the Rock fraternity.
Adam Crouch read it as well, big Shazam fan, and he felt that maybe they were trying to pack a bit too much in, but they were, but I thought it kind of worked, you know?
Yeah, I felt they kind of introduced a lot of new threads, which is important in a number one, but they gave none of them really any decent amount of screen time.
I hope Geoff Johns sticks with this, because this is his return, really, to writing a few comics.
Yeah, and I'm happy with it.
Yeah.
I really hope we get a little bit more of Super Bunny, because I thought that was cool.
Yeah, no, I mean, I
right at the very end to see that little rabbit fly out the window.
With all the stuff he set up, I could see this being a very interesting comic. This really was a very much a first issue jump on now, you know? It was new reader friendly.
Yeah.
I thought. I mean, I gave it 8 out of 10. Probably could be a bit flattering. What did you give it, Stu?
I had a 7.5.
Yeah, okay.
So it's good. It's good. It's really easily read. But
and look, Shazam is one of Geoff Johns' favourite characters. He's been pushing.
And you can see there's a lot of love there for Shazam or Captain Marvel, whoever he.
And considering a movie's coming out, probably a good idea for DC to be getting the ball running with an ongoing.
Yeah, plus it gets everyone thinking Shazam family.
Yes.
Sequel.
I've always been a huge, huge fan of Mary Marvel as well, and their brother-sister relationship. The siblings. I love the Shazam family. And don't forget Captain Marvel Jr.
But I like the way that this family was made from a bunch of orphan kids that were kind of...
Yeah, definitely.
...thrown together and...
Well, they always were. They were always orphans.
Yeah, but they have changed a few of the details in the backstory with this retelling. Sure.
Well, Freddy's still a cripple. And
the wizard dies in this one.
Not a big fan of that.
Like, the wizard, dying breath, gives all the power to Billy.
Not a fan. I mean, to me, the wizard should still be alive. I don't understand.
I didn't like the idea that he kind of had to learn about the powers himself with no guidance.
Yeah, I mean...
And then all of a sudden he discovers the most powerful spell, which was to give the power up to the other kids.
Yeah.
And they became the family.
How the hell would he know what the powers were if the wizard didn't tell him? The whole point of the wizard is that he explains what the powers are. I don't understand why we killed the wizard. I really don't understand that. The wizard's been fucking a linchpin of this whole franchise since the 40s. Why did we kill the wizard? Why?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. I think it was stupid.
It's an odd choice.
It is odd.
I'm hoping they make it pay off.
Yeah.
Like there's a story reason somewhere that's coming up.
Was Tawny Tiger in it? No. We didn't see Tawny Tiger.
No.
Okay, well, Geoff Johns, get on it. I like my Tawny Tiger. And where was the uncle? Nowhere.
Nowhere.
I guess we saw at the end the twist was the dad turned up. I guess
the kind of
Black Adam or someone.
I don't know who it's going to be.
Yeah, but someone like that.
Yeah, apparently Billy's biological father shows up.
Well, I mean, it's watch this space for next episode.
So look, I mean, they have made some changes to the canon.
I don't mind that.
It's a new fresh reboot, and I'm happy to see where it goes.
It's new reader friendly. Absolutely. And it looks great. The art is fantastic.
And I can imagine a lot of kids coming back and reading this once the Shazam movie comes out, and they kind of want to read something.
Yeah, definitely.
This would be, because by the time the movie comes out,
there'll be a trade
this
out.
Will have a couple of trades out, hopefully.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's a good place to put kids on.
Then we jump into Green Lantern 2, Grant Morrison and Liam Sharp. We love the first issue. Man, this really brought us into the cop side that Grant Morrison has been talking about, how he wants a procedural cop sort of story.
Yeah.
And this did do that.
Absolutely, it did.
Now, Stu, how were you over there? Because I know you're probably not as big a Grant Morrison head as me, but he certainly... has the Green Lantern franchise in his hands, and I am excited by what he's doing.
Oh, this is 100% up my alley. I love this kind of out there, wacky space, cosmic...
Yeah, great fit.
...adventure. This is fantastic.
This is... I'm glad to hear that, because...
You've got some great humour in the villains as well.
Yeah.
Like, there was some really good humorous moments there.
How funny was it when they were talking about him being called Evil Star?
Yeah, and they were just laughing at his name.
And Liam Sharp... Liam Sharp has done some wonderful jobs with the artwork here, because it's very...
Yes.
Like, how about that Green Lantern with sort of like a sort of
exploding head?
Yeah.
His head is literally an exploding mountain.
This feels like... It's unbelievable that it's taken this long for Grant Morrison with, you know, his talent and vision to be on a Green Lantern title, because it so fits some of his concepts. You know,
Oh, yeah.
He's always...
And immediately you're like, okay, this is just a perfect fit.
yeah, he's...
How has it taken him this long to get back on a title that fits his style so well?
The reason is that the DC throw Grant Morrison whatever he wants, and he just wanted to... He's editing heavy metal and doing a lot of his creator-owned work, and after Batman, he wanted to focus on that.
Yeah.
It's his own choice. Like, he basically said, I'll do Multiversity, and I'll do the Wonder Woman Earth 2 stuff, or Earth 1, that is the title of the graphic novel series. And he really didn't want to be doing more DC mainstream stuff, because he's done so much of it.
Yeah.
But they brought him back, and, I mean, he sells copies, and he's always entertaining, and one thing about Grant Morrison is...
But, I mean, they say that the mainstream... This feels like the most abstract mainstream.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's
like, yes, it's Green Lantern, massive character.
Yeah.
But this story feels so out there.
Yeah, that's Grant Morrison, dude.
That it's perfect.
I think it's funny because
it's the perfect fit for someone like Green Lantern,
dude. And how funny is this? Like, I love Grant Morrison. He primarily works on DC or his own stuff, and yeah. I've read so much of it. And it's flat out cosmic. You watch about cosmic. I've read so much of it.
Yeah.
I get so into his way of doing things. I love.
Yeah.
It. Like, he's been such a huge influence on me creatively. And look, frankly, I don't mind Green Lantern at all, and I'm so down for this ride. I guarantee this is going to be one of the most bizarre rides.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
I mean, you know when the second-in-command has an explosion for a head.
Oh, yeah.
That you're not dealing with normal comic book writing.
And let me tell you, as someone who's read, you know, the majority of his work, he's always at his best when he's doing his own crazy stuff but tying it to a narrative. It's what makes The Invisible so good. He keeps it to a narrative pattern. This does get really bizarre, but he's still telling a fairly logical story, and that's when Grant Morrison's at his absolute best. When sometimes he goes way too far out there and he sort of loses the concept of the story, it can sometimes become a bit just not as rewarding. But, like, his best stuff, as someone who's read a lot, is this kind of thing. He's doing Green Lantern, he's tying into a police procedural, and he'll go into these crazy ideas, and it really is just something that I think he's born to do. It's kind of what he was put on this planet for.
Yeah.
And, yeah, we're going to keep going. I'm giving this an 8.5 out of 10, Stu.
So am I.
Yeah, it's an excellent.
Really enjoyable.
And I would recommend to DC readers, if you are interested, get issues 1 and 2 and hop on board now, because, really, it's actually pretty new reader-friendly, weirdly enough. Like, you don't need to know a lot.
Oh, no, it actually helps if you don't know anything.
Yeah, you can just jump in.
It actually helps if you're a fresh reader.
You want to get in at the start of his run, though. That's the thing with Grant Morrison. You want, because he'll pay stuff off.
Yeah, and on. I think you've got to read issue 1 with a very open mind.
Definitely, definitely.
Like, sit down and know that before you start, it's going to be weird.
Definitely, yeah.
But it works.
Now, turning to our next book, Martian Manhunter 1. Wow. I mean, I gave this a 4.5 out of 10.
I think you're being generous.
I thought this was terrible.
I fell asleep twice while trying to read this book.
This was really bad.
And it's 22 pages long.
Like, dude.
Like, that's... And this wasn't at, like, midnight.
Yeah.
This was me trying to read this at, I think, about 6 o'clock in the evening. Like...
Okay. So it wasn't just me.
No.
Because Steve Orlando... I've read some Steve Orlando I've enjoyed. I started reading this. It starts out with... not a fan of the art, as well, can I add. And
I didn't hate the art.
Well, I'm starting it, reading it, and I'm going, okay, some bizarre art, but we're going for kind of like almost like a retro 50s feel. Okay. And, okay, no, all okay. Then we got to Mars, and if I can be brutally honest, didn't really properly read a lot of that. I got lost, and I sort of wrapped it up, got to the end, I went, this is not good.
No, it was terrible.
This is apparently, I think this is...
I think they were trying to tell about 3 stories in one book.
Oh, it just...
And it would jump... Jarringly from one story to the next.
Look, put it this way, we're not covering more Martian Manhunter. And guess what? This book is getting rave reviews on the internet, which tells me everything I need to know about internet reviewing. Like, are you fucking kidding?
So, internet? I mean, look, the story is not cohesive.
No.
You can't follow it easily.
Was Martian Manhunter a bad guy in Mars? Or was that someone else? I was like, what the fuck is he doing?
Yeah.
I was really struggling on the Mars bits. Guess what? I want this for the record. Martian Manhunter is actually a really good character, and he's often used well. I've read quite a lot of Justice League, so please don't come at me thinking I'm hating on Martian Manhunter. This is execution. This is the creative team. Steve Orlando, this is some of your worst work that I have seen. I'm sorry, but it's terrible. 4.5 You know what? It's 3 out of 10.
That's what I gave it.
Yeah.
I gave it a 3.
Look, I'm sorry. This is the opposite of a fucking recommend.
Yeah, I thought a 4.5 was actually pretty generous.
Well, I was so... I was kind of going, is it me? I mean, this seems fucking woeful. And, like, apparently it's like a 10-part series. I just massively struggled to get to 10.
And even when they were, like, going through the crime scene, which that was the only story that I connected with and enjoyed.
Me too. Yes.
Towards the end of that, when they're in the car crash, and he was screaming, don't look at me, don't... And I was like, really?
Because he changed into his Green Lantern... Or not Green Lantern, Martian self.
But it just felt so bad.
Well, he's afraid of fire, so that was the reason. Like, because Martian Manhunter's got a phobia of fire.
Yeah. It just felt terrible.
It was shit.
Because, by the way, in the panel before that, you saw the car.
Yeah.
Not a single flame anywhere.
Yes.
Just a car sitting there, it hit a tree.
Yeah, I was... Well, this escalated quickly.
It, like, fell off a ditch, it hit a tree, and all of a sudden he's screaming in the car, don't look at me, I'm hideous.
Well, much like this comic, not a fan, Stu, and I've got to be honest, it was one of the worst we've done this year, frankly. I thought this was up there.
Yeah, down there.
Way down there, and we won't be doing issue 2. That's it.
Oh, I've read worse comics, but not by a lot.
Steve Orlando, you've done yourself a disservice. Go back to the drawing board. You know, I've enjoyed some of your comics. I think you've got... recently we did that comic of his that was the future one, like whatever it was called, like future. Remember the future Warriors one, whatever it was, Electric Warriors.
But oh, yeah, Steve Orlando.
Okay. Look, the guy's a bit nutty, which I don't mind, but I just felt this was just poor. And how it's getting rave reviews on the internet, I don't know. No. Are these people on fucking drugs? Like, might help. Like, seriously.
I feel like they're either on not enough or way too many drugs.
Well, they're drinking the Kool-Aid a bit too much, guys. Yeah. Like, you're that desperate to get in DC's pocket, you're drinking the Kool-Aid like it's fucking going out of fashion. I'm going to take a fucking shot here. Some of these people who write these reviews, I write reviews for Batman Universe, okay? Like, show some critical insight. Like, don't fucking... drink the Kool-Aid to that extent. Because this is not a good comic by any stretch of the imagination. And it will fail in the marketplace. So please don't come back to me. It will struggle to get to 10 issues. It's that bad. You know?
Yeah, and it's not a DC thing. Like, we've just reviewed Shazam and Green Lantern.
No, we loved both of them. We're on the review list, like, you know, like, Jesus Christ. Like, learn how to give a fucking critical review. These people who go 5 out of 5, best comic ever. It's like, yeah, really? Like, this is the best comic ever. Wow. You haven't read many.
Yeah, I've only read one, but this is the best one ever.
Anyway, whatever. I mean, make your own mind up, people, but you've got the Signal review. 3 out of 10 from both of us, Stu?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, and I think it's fucking lucky to get that many.
Oh, I could be argued down.
Yeah. Now, finally wrapping up, Stu, we had the Merry X-Men Holiday Special.
Yes, we did.
Which was an interesting arrangement.
The days of December in a calendar, almost.
Yeah, what did you think?
Some of the stories fell flat.
Sure.
I think, so to kind of catch up listeners that haven't read this, it effectively, every page is one day in December.
Which was an interesting thing. I actually liked that.
Yeah. As a set out for like a calendar. And they'd show what a particular character did on that day.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a couple of through lines, namely Jubilee.
Yep.
And the baby... that kind of get kidnapped and they're running through a post-apocalyptic kind of mall where everything's trying to kill them, but they're getting great discounts. So there's a bit of humour in there.
Yeah.
And then they throw in odd stories from other major characters.
Like what about the Deadpool?
Deadpool was one of the ones that fell flat for me.
Yes, but I was like, what the hell is going on?
Although, funnily enough, my favourite story of all was Glob.
Yeah.
That was brilliant. And there's, like, 3 panels. There's, like, nothing to it. It's just him setting up some mistletoe and then sitting down, like, just desperately underneath it.
And
looking hopeful and smiling.
He's starting to go up in my books.
I love it. The comic relief that they've got with him.
Glob is actually perfect. Starting to hit.
Terrible as a superhero. Brilliant. Well, brilliant as some comic relief.
Comic relief, though.
Got
to give it up for comic relief.
Yeah. Like, the Wolverine one was bad as well.
Wolverine was bad.
Hashtag hot claws.
Really?
No thank you, Marvel.
Really bad, though.
I like that you try to take off hashtag hot claws.
Yeah.
It's not going to take off.
No, it wasn't good. And these hot claws aren't good either.
No.
These hot claws are part of the problem.
The only bit I liked was when the kid was like, that looked like Wolverine, but it couldn't be because he doesn't have hot claws.
Can I say, they've bungled the return of Wolverine
massively.
So badly.
Yeah.
That, like...
Now they're fucking up Wolverine's appearances in other comics. Yes.
What should have been the glorious return of, like, a linchpin Marvel character has been so badly mangled because they're so desperate to spin it into 1,000 titles but not give you the story. It's just so bad. Like, can you imagine getting, like, for Christmas, you go, wow, it's the return of Wolverine, like, 7 issues. You read it and go... Shit.
Can we put him, like, can we put him back to sleep again?
I didn't learn anything other than he kind of randomly turned up and didn't provide any, you know, sort of information.
And now he has hashtag hot claws.
It's so bad. Like, it really is. And, like, I've got to say, like, Marvel have just how not to reboot a character.
They fucked up a couple of those stories. Some of them were done well.
Yeah, but some of the stuff was good. Like, Gambit stealing the figures, the X-Men figures, was funny.
They were Wolverine figures.
That were all good.
Kept by some conglomerate.
So he breaks in
and steals them for everyone, like a Santa.
Yeah.
There are a couple of really cool stories.
Mm, definitely.
And the Jubilee run through with... what's the villain's name? Is it Game Master?
Arcade.
Yeah. With always Arcade running the...
Always a good character.
The Murder Mall.
I would like to see Arcade in a Marvel movie. I think he could be quite good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jesse Eisenberg.
Yeah, a TL Marvel movie that I think would be really good. Arcade doing the one where they've all got to be on the island together and kill each other off. Like Avengers
Hunger
Academy.
Games.
Yeah, well, they did that in the comics. It was really good.
Yeah.
I think Nico from, have you say a name from Runaways might have won it. And I think a couple of others survived as well. It was a really, really interesting run.
It's a cool idea.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to do it in a movie just because Hunger Games, but...
Okay. But, look, I mean, overall, I would give this like I'd give it a 7.5.
I gave it a 7.
Yeah.
It's certainly enjoyable.
Is it a stocking stuffer? Would you give it to an X-Men fan, you know?
Probably not.
No?
If it was part of a larger collection, yes.
If you were giving it to, like, a younger cousin or whatever, would you be giving, like, a trade? I probably would be giving a trade these days.
I would be giving trades. Yeah. Unless it's a landmark single that's going to go up in value.
Oh, sure. Different
like a wedding issue or bat dick or something that's going to increase.
But for a young kid who doesn't know a lot, you'd give a trade. Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because then they get a complete story, at least.
They get a whole story. They get a couple of characters.
Mm. Yeah.
You don't get the ads.
Yes. True. Good point.
Like,
good point.
I don't know. I'd personally prefer to give a trade as an introduction.
No, me too. I mean, I always remember when I was a kid, young kid, going to my mate's house, and he had, like, a 100-page black and white Justice League quarterly. And
well, yeah.
Jesus Christ, it fascinated me. Yeah. I was so interested.
Yeah.
Because I picked it up. Everyone, he'd read it 1,000 times completely, you know. And I was going, wow, everyone's in here like Superman. I'm meeting the Justice Society. And I was like, what is going on? I need to get involved. But it was 100 pages, so it was a decent-sized read, you know.
Yeah. The other thing is, when he finishes reading that, it's going to sit on a shelf somewhere.
Yes.
And maybe 20 years' time, it will still be there, still be read occasionally.
Definitely.
Whereas if you give someone a single...
Yeah, it goes.
Especially a kid.
Yeah.
That's going to get destroyed, lost.
Exactly.
Like, ripped. Like, it's not going to last.
It's going to get shredded.
You give it to them, like, in a case, and you're like, this is worth money.
Which is pointless for a kid.
Don't read it. It's worth money. It's terrible.
Yeah. I've never been a big fan of that. Like, let's slab it, let's lock it away in a fucking vault. It's like, Jesus Christ.
Look, I mean, I get it if you're going back and buying them for that.
If you're Nick Cage.
If you're buying, like, first issues of, like, Spider-Man or Superman
Any
of those, like, things that are worth hundreds of thousands, if not millions
of dollars.
You got that kind
of disposable, Stu? You got that kind of disposable making those kind of moves?
Oh, yeah.
You've got a whole portfolio.
Not a problem, yeah.
You're slumming it on the single, aren't you? Just, you know, like, with my trade.
Because I'm funding my comic book habit. Every cent goes into buying that Spider-Man, the sweet, sweet Spider-Man issue one.
All right.
For $3 million.
So what did I give it? A 7.5 and you gave it a 7?
I gave it a 7.
And look, it's entertaining enough. Now, I tell you one thing we haven't been doing is reading the weekly Uncanny X-Men.
Yeah, for good reason. We tried, and then we kind of decided not to.
I'm just waiting for Wolverine 1. You know what I mean? Like, I want Wolverine 1.
I feel like you're going to be disappointed, though, Dave.
I mean, could we have someone on it other than Charles Soule as well? That would be nice. He certainly has been a man of giving you 5 out of 10. If you want a guy to give you 5.5 out of 10, here's your guy, Chuck Soule. I'd rather a 7.5 out of 10. You know?
Yeah, as an average, yes.
Yeah. Anyway, trade of the week, the unbeatable Squirrel Girl. Your pick, Stu?
It's my pick. Definitely my pick.
Now, this was Ryan North, and is it Erica Henderson, I believe, mm-hmm. on art duties. I have been saving this one up. I've heard it. I used to listen to a lot of Talking Comics, and they talked about this comic every week.
Okay? Yes, when it was coming out weekly, yes. Massive buzz.
I very much enjoyed this. What struck me from the very beginning, for what is, you know, the Tumblr generation of comics is what they were called, like Hellcat, this, they all had a similar kind of humour. But they have the humour, but what I also really noticed in this Unbeatable Squirrel Girl is there's a lot of detail. It's actually quite a dense read, and I mean that in a good way. Like,
yeah, especially with those little passages at the bottom of the pages.
Yeah, like it took time.
They could pack in an extra couple of lines of text in there, and it really just enriched that experience.
I felt...
Without making it slower read.
No, that was an entertaining read.
Yeah.
The humour landed, which I expected.
Yes.
Okay, because I knew its reputation, and I like similar comics, okay? So the humour landed, the story was fine, like it was fun, and I found the dialogue was funny, the characterisation was funny, and they really bustled with characterisation. Like, there was... Squirrel Girl is great. You know, she's just hilarious.
Yes.
And
she kind of evolved from a character that was pure comic relief and almost brought in as a joke.
Well, yeah.
Like, as a massive just joke.
I would say she's still fairly comic relief.
Yeah, but now it's kind of ironic comic relief.
Yeah, well, it's a more modern take, isn't it? Like,
whereas she's now taken out Doctor Doom single-handedly.
Yeah. Well, isn't that the joke, that she's been in Galactus and everyone else?
Yeah, exactly. Like, she's got one of the greatest resumes of all time for taking down villains solo, yet she's Squirrel Girl.
I actually found this really quite... how can I say, like, something I'd look forward to, but the stuff I normally save is a little different. It's a little bit more like the Grant Morrison kind of stuff. It's a different kind of feel.
Yeah.
It's a bit darker, a bit more abstract. This was just flat out, like, it really reminded me of maybe a quirky romance comic or even quirky Archie. Like, it was that kind of feel. It's kind of it's a weird mix of modern kind of humour, but a kind of throwback retro style that I really enjoy.
Yeah, see, for me, it's got a couple of different layers of comedy and script in there.
Mm.
That, I mean, and I have. I've given this to friends that have never read a comic.
Mm.
I've given this to, like, younger kids.
Sure.
And as well as, like, veteran comic readers.
Yes.
And they're all picking up something different and loving it.
Well,
like, this works on almost every level.
No, it's a very well-made comic.
If you're a kid, the artwork's fantastic. You can follow the story. It's funny.
It's cute as well. It's got cute appeal too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kids love it.
Yeah,
if you've never read a comic book, it's very easy to read.
Yes.
They throw in a little bit of dialogue at the bottom, which kind of... It's tongue-in-cheek from the readers, from the writers.
Yeah, it's never explicit who's exactly writing that. Sometimes it feels like it's from her perspective. Other times the writer's perspective.
Well, it's kind of implied that it's the writers.
Yeah. Okay.
From their point of view the whole way through.
Mm.
But they'll often write something from Squirrel Girl's...
I've got a question, and please don't take this as like a sexist question. It's just a question. Is the character, one of the characters, transgender? I had a feeling they were, and it probably wasn't. May have been, because I was reading volume 2, like the second volume. You know the character I'm talking about with the, I think, red hair?
I don't think explicitly.
But maybe...
Possibly in later issues,
anyway,
it's not off the table. Like, it does fit with this genre of comic.
Yeah, definitely, and that's very much the, you know, like, these Tumblr writers sort of were going for those kind of, like, putting those kind of things in the comics. Like, Kate Leth would do that a lot. She did a lot of sort of, like, you know, subversive kind of, like, gay humour. Bisexual humour in Hellcat. It was kind of tucked in there, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you look for it, which I was very much in favour of. Having read a lot of Hellcat, which was adjacent to this, and they did cross over a little bit.
Yeah, so I mean, Hellcat came out slightly after this run, I think.
It was during the.
Well, like, Schoolgirl is still running.
Yeah, no, Hellcat came out during this run, but it
finished. But I think this volume came out just before Kate Leth was on.
Okay.
Hellcat, but maybe a couple of months or something. It wasn't.
Yeah, it was adjacent.
Like, there were concurrent runs.
Yeah.
But I think what we're reading here slightly predates Hellcat.
Okay, well, which wouldn't surprise me. Now, my point was there's a similar humour, but this is a bit slightly, which is good. I like, this is like when you read writers who are similar but different. Do you know what I mean? Like, Ryan North, there's a lot of computer jokes and stuff in this.
Yeah, well, I mean, Dorian Green is a computer science
student. Yeah, which I didn't know. Student. I had no idea. I'm not someone who's actually read a lot of Squirrel Girl. Like, the most Squirrel Girl I've read, I knew she was a babysitter for, like, Luke Cage and Jessica Jones. Or Jessica Jones, Jessica Drew, whatever her name is.
Drew, yeah.
Yeah. And
Spider-Woman.
Yeah. And just in general, I knew who she was, and then this is honestly a character that, like, I must admit I have a big soft spot for now, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I really grew to appreciate Squirrel Girl after reading this.
Yeah. Now, one thing I will say is, like, this is where this was as good as I hoped it would be. Like, I'd give this a 9 out of 10 easily.
Yeah.
I think it's excellent. I know that, like, this had a lot of fans that didn't translate into, like, massive, massive numbers, but I just think to myself, my God, Marvel, if you could learn to balance your books to have this, have, you know, a different sort of slightly more traditional superhero take, have all those books together, you'd have a balanced line.
Yeah.
Rather than...
And for a brief period of time, they were running this at Hellcat.
Yeah.
And they had two successful runs, both getting critical praise.
Yeah.
And doing super well, yet they had so many other flops running at the same time.
I know. And,
like, at the same time, their X-Men and their Avengers...
terrible.
...were really poor.
I know. It's weird. And I would say, you know, we're not reading Avengers, but I would hope that it's better now.
But you look now, and they don't really have this kind of humor.
Is Squirrel Girl still running?
Squirrel Girl is still running.
Is Ryan North still doing it? I don't think so. I think he may have left.
I'm not sure, actually.
Yeah. I've got a feeling he may have left not that long ago. Because, I mean, you can understand that these guys get burnt out. There's a lot of detail in these comics. Like, to be honest, these six issues took me longer than I expected it to, but I enjoyed them a lot.
Yeah, it is. It feels like it takes a certain amount of time to read this as, like, a 60s comic.
Hmm.
But I also feel like I'm reading it a lot quicker.
Yeah, it was...
It does have the feel of a modern comic, where you're reading quite quickly.
Hmm.
But then you kind of intentionally slow down every now and again and go back and have a look once you've read the little caption at the bottom of the page. And
what I'm sure is what I really like with this and Hellcat, I think both times you've got writers who've got modern sensibilities, but they must love certain quirks of the older stuff. Like, they actually like it, not just ironically, they do like it in some way.
Yeah.
And they mesh them. And so instead of getting kind of like modern action comic, you know, yada, 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 which we've seen a thousand times, Stu, you know, badly and done well, this is kind of, no, we're kind of more in love with the form of the comic, that like an Archie comic was, mixing with like a kind of classic superhero feel, and then giving it a modern spin. And it's this weird mixture of influences that are both modern and vintage. And I think it really works well. And I think that there's a very stable audience there that you could maintain. Like, that's the other thing. If I'm in marketing, I'm going, you know what? This product here works, and we'll get a certain segment and niche, and we can probably milk them for a long time.
I mean, the amazing thing is they've managed to do that with characters that aren't popular. Before these
Hellcat
runs...
Hellcat and Squirrel Girl are like, you know...
Hellcat and Squirrel Girl were, like, F-list heroes.
My God, I didn't even know that Hellcat was a character. Squirrel Girl, I knew was a character because she's in one episode of New Avengers. You know what I mean?
See, I was the opposite. Before reading comics, I'd heard of Hellcat.
Had you really? Wow.
Only because she was connected to Jessica Jones.
Right, okay. Oh, in the show.
No, like I in early comics of Jessica Jones.
Oh, okay.
I'd read some Jessica Jones quite early on.
Right, okay. So you knew that there was
I knew there was a character called Hellcat. Okay. And then Squirrel Girl had popped up maybe once or twice.
Yeah, she had.
But as a laughing stock. Like,
yeah.
Like a massive Avengers comic where they're struggling to beat Galactus, Squirrel Girl fly in, kick Galactus in the face, and then die.
Now, I've got a graphic novel that I bought. I think Ryan North, I think, wrote it. Called it's like Unbeatable Squirrel Girl versus the Universe, and I'm gonna read it like very shortly. You know what I mean? I bought it at the height of the Squirrel Girl craze, and I just have it on sale. Digitally, and I have not read it. But having read this, I'm like, I'm going to keep going on my Marvel Unlimited. This is much like Nova, where I'm and Ghost Rider.
Yeah, the new takes on both.
Yeah, where I'm like, I really enjoyed them so much, so that I'm going to keep going on my Marvel Unlimited and keep reading. Like, there's no need to stop. I will also mention a comic that we'll do on the show that's similar, not similar in tone, but. What's it called? Is it The Unbelievable Gwenpool? Yeah, I started reading that on the recommend of someone on Marvel Unlimited, and I read like about 15, 20 issues. It's fucking awesome.
It's fantastic. Yeah,
yeah, it's really good. So anyway, this is good because this shows yet another really good modern Marvel comic. And I know plenty of people who pay out and say that these comics are terrible. This is a particularly, I think, very good comic. I'm giving it a very genuine 9 out of 10, and we'll keep reading.
I'll give you 9.5. Yeah. I think this is as close to perfect as you can kind of get. There's not a lot.
Yeah. No, she's a fascinating character, like in a funny way. Like, she's just a funny character as well.
But this, for me, is a writer that properly understands sarcasm and irony.
Oh, yeah, and that's in short supply sometimes with comic book writers.
I think a lot of comic book writers don't really get irony.
No, you know, they'll
write something and it's, you have to take it at face value because there is no second layer of depth here.
But I mean,
whereas this comic has layers upon layers of depth.
Yeah.
You can read this as a child and enjoy it. You can read this as a veteran like you.
Mm, sure.
And get so much out of it by looking at the clash of styles, the clash of genres, but you've also got the comedy aspects. It's...
Oh, and most importantly, this could work well with an 11, 12-year-old coming in just reading it. Bang.
There are very few audiences that won't get something out of this comic and enjoy it.
Yeah, exactly. I think, probably your old dinosaurs will probably sniff, but I think even some of them, those cold hearts could be warmed by a comic like this, really frankly.
Look, yes, this is left-leaning. Fairly heavily left-leaning.
Yeah, but it's harmless.
But it's not trying to be slap you in the face.
No.
Left.
If anything, it's got a sarcastic sense of humour about itself, I think, a little
absolutely.
Bit.
Absolutely.
Which I always think is
deep. I think this doesn't try to push that agenda on you.
No.
It's in there.
Yeah.
And if you agree with it, then you can, you love it.
Yeah.
But if you don't agree with that kind of political leaning, I don't think that diminishes his comic that much.
No, I don't think it's a big factor at all.
It is there. It is a factor, but it's not big.
No, it's not big at all. No.
It's not pushing it in your face every episode.
Certainly doesn't. It didn't hinder my enjoyment, and I'm certainly no radical left, you know?
No, exactly.
Like, I enjoyed it.
Let's be completely honest. Most people in Australia are kind of middling at best.
Yeah.
We really don't have a hardcore left or right political party in this country.
No, we're not quite as extreme as in the States, I think.
Or many countries, yeah.
Yeah, no, definitely. Anyway, another good selection from you, Stu. I mean, you're finally back in form. You're starting to pull out some winners
finally
now.
Finally back in form.
You know, you're not letting...
Never been not on form,
Dad. You're not letting your...
Always on form.
You're behind in the polls, but you're not letting that hinder you. I mean, are you ready? Have you got a concession speech planned for these polls? You got like a sort of like, when will you
go? I do, and I'm going to be interested to see how you read it. I think it's going to be quite interesting.
What do you mean by that?
Because I'm not going to be reading it. It's a concession speech.
Oh, I see. I was like, why wouldn't I be reading yours?
Yeah. Stu is a very gracious winner.
It's been an honour
to compete.
Might have been bitter. So far, I've lost one and I questioned the polls.
Yeah, you did, yeah. Yeah.
And attacked the listener
base. You went full on dark.
And attacked the listener base for their choices.
Yeah.
So did you, though, as well. You were like, shame on you.
Oh, because this was a...
Take a good hard look.
This was a travesty of a...
Thanks to the Punisher Army.
Infinity Gauntlet.
Yeah. No, Punisher wasn't Chuck Dixon, Punisher wasn't Chuck Dixon and John Romita Jr., dude. Two fucking legends of the industry combined.
One of, if not the best Punisher story.
Thank you.
But it's a Punisher story.
We've got... Don't talk like that. We've got Chuck on in, like, less than 24 hours. You don't talk like that around here. You know,
I love Chuck.
He's in Florida right now, and his little bat phone's, you know, it's blinking red. Now, okay. So, Stu, we had some Aquaman's coming up. We had some suggestions from Adam the Computer Crouch to do Aquaman trades.
And we certainly will. The week before Aquaman comes out, we'll do a... an Aquaman trade tie it in properly.
Yeah.
So we can line it up. We're taking suggestions if you want to send us suggestions.
That's right. Oh, yeah. And I had my new thing, too, from... I came up with this idea the other day that, like, when we're doing the weekly comics, if listeners out there have comics that are coming out, you know, the week, you know, that we're going to be doing the show for either DC, Image, or Marvel that you want us to maybe do... Shout, you know, throw me a suggestion in the Facebook page or on my general Facebook.
And we'll say that doesn't have to be any of those three. It can be a little outside the box if you've got
whatever you want.
Smaller indie comics, as long as it's accessible.
Sure, but we get review copies of DC, Marvel, and Image, so I would prefer that. You know,
we don't get review copies of Marvel. We purchase those legitimately.
That's true.
We get those through Comixology if we can.
That's true. Sure.
If it's available on Comixology or
if it's available on Comixology, we'll get
a similar kind of product. Let us know.
Exactly. Yeah. Good point, Stu. Very good point, actually.
Still a good point, anyway, Dave.
I also have to work out what we're doing next week, but I can't. I haven't even thought about it, to be honest. I forgot.
Just letting the team down again. Really? Again. Letting the thing down.
I've actually got a suggestion. I'm thinking...
This is going to be either terrible or brilliant, and I can't tell.
Well, I'm thinking...
Your face is saying it's leaning towards terrible, and I'm trying to hide it.
What I'm thinking is we might go back in time.
Uh-oh.
We're going to take a time machine.
Uh-oh.
And we might go back to, like, a Brave and the Bold, World's Finest, Volume 1. I think it's, like early 60s or something. I'll put it up on the Facebook page. I've got the hardcover. I've also got digital copies. Yeah, I think we might do that, Stu. Like, Volume 1, Brave and the Bold, World's Finest. I think it's called World's Finest, Volume 1. Batman and Superman, you know?
Yeah, I don't know if I've read Volume 1, but I've read Brave and the Bold.
Okay.
That movie, Superman.
You feeling it? Like, this is from the 60s. Yeah? You feeling it?
We can do that, sure.
Why not? Let's take it back. Let's take a time machine.
Well, it's your pick. It can go one of two ways, Dave.
Well, I've got an incredible headache. And I'm banned. And the only things I could come up with were Conan and Punisher. And I'm like, they're both banned. So I've managed to squeeze something else out of my tortured brain. So that's as good as it's going to get. Yeah, I think that'll be interesting. Now... Obviously, we've got Chuck Dixon coming up. I'm going to be doing an interview with him. And so shoot me any questions you've got because you've basically got the whole day. You've got like about a 12-hour stretch where I'll take questions. We've already got some good ones as well. It should be a pretty interesting interview. Follow us on our Facebook page. And yeah, I mean, we'll put the new poll up. I'm not even sure what the poll
next
is.
Next week, though, you've got a week off.
Relax. Oh, they've got a week off to relax.
Relax. Everyone can chill out.
Well, then I guess it's good that we didn't,
and kind of rethink your life choices after that abysmal poll result.
Well, it's good that we didn't release what we're going to have the poll. Because
that's why I said we shouldn't.
Okay. Well, I didn't. I don't
David,
know.
David's just in his own little world right now.
I don't even know what it is. You know? Like, I can't remember what I've picked. God. Jesus.
I mean, I can tell you, but there's no fun in that.
No, there's a document somewhere.
There is. So we couldn't cheat. Otherwise, right now, I would be completely abusing the power that I have in remembering things.
All right. Good night.
See ya.